I call the regular meeting of the Fluvana County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All right, now we'll adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommended changes or other updates? Do I have a motion?
So made.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Nichols?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the board, I've given you a heads up on this before, but we need to just do the formal adoption of this community service award resolution, and then we'll do a presentation after that. So, Mr. Weaver.
Okay. All right. P, Community Service Award Resolution recognizing Dr. Robert Mayfield. Mr. Nichols.
Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move the Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Community Service Awards Resolution honoring Dr. Robert D. Mayfield.
Second.
Motion's been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you, Board. If you could join us around the front, I'd like to have Dr. Mayfield come forward, but also introduce Mr. Sam Graham, who is the new plant manager for Tenasca Virginia Generating Station. So, Robert, come on up. And Mr. Graham will be Dr. Mayfield's replacement. He's been with us for some time already, but delighted to have him in the new leadership role as Dr. Mayfield moves on to Pennsylvania. So, Dr. Mayfield,
he's right on this side.
I'm going to stand right over here.
I like being over here.
The difference way.
Yeah, we do. Continue it all out. Over down. Thank you.
Sam, can you just go down by Mr. O'Brien there, please?
Sam, I know.
And we're delighted to have Mr. Graham take over as a suitable replacement for Dr. Mayfield, who's meant so much to our county in the last decade or more. So this is resolution number 14-2017, Community Service Award Resolution honoring Dr. Robert D. Mayfield. Whereas Dr. Robert Mayfield came to Fluvanna County in 2002 as plant manager of the Tenasca Virginia Generating Station, the first natural gas fueled power plant in Virginia. And whereas Dr. Mayfield's leadership and service in Fluvanna County has been both admirable and worthy of esteem. And whereas Dr. Mayfield and his TVGS team received the 2008 Virginia Governor Community Service and Volunteerism Award, achieved an impressive 10 Best Practice Awards from the Combined Cycle Journal, and lauded as one of 2007 Model Gas-Fired Plants in the World in Power Magazine, and recognized its excellent operations record and good corporate citizenship in 2013 as one of the top 6 natural gas-fueled plants worldwide, also by Power Magazine. And whereas Dr. Mayfield and his TVGS team are recognized as among the best in the energy industry as an OSHA Voluntary Protection Program star site, for which only 2,440 out of more than 7 million work sites nationwide and just 41 in Virginia hold this honor. And whereas he has spearheaded Tenasca's partnership with the Fluvanna County Department of Social Services, the Angel Gift Program, by donating over $60,000 for clothing, toys, gifts, and for children and the elderly. TVGS further partnered with the Fluvanna Food Bank to donate 320 turkeys for their annual Thanksgiving food drive, sponsored the County Sheriff's annual award night and dinner, and hosted an annual First Responders Appreciation Day and dinner. And whereas Dr. Mayfield partnered with Carisbrook Elementary to assist in implementing, participating in, and funding the ongoing success of their STEM program. And whereas he is transferring to take on another challenging role at a Tenasca facility in Pennsylvania, and now therefore be it resolved on this 15th day of November 2017 that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors hereby recognizes the significant civic responsibility, community leadership, volunteer services, and mentoring and coaching contributions of Dr. Robert D. Mayfield. foregoing resolution duly and regularly adopted by the Savannah County Board on this date.
Thank you very much. Say something?
If you'd like to.
Thank you to Brenda. You know, Brenda, when I first got here, got me introduced to the local, and then she said, go to the state, and I wanted working with the governor, Department of Ed. So, and Perry with Johnson for the school board, and, you know, Mazelle, you were in my first leadership class. And Mr. Weaver, you and I have our conflicts, but way back when.
We've been there.
Sam will carry the reins. He has a great plan, great people, and he'll do the same thing. And Mr. Nichols, being Navy, thank you very much for the award.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll miss you.
Wonderful.
Right?
Maybe.
Okay.
You really regret being here too.
And give you the best of your husband. Yeah. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the board, a few things to report, and start with Scott Morris was lauded today, at least nationally, or at least publicly, in the Daily Progress. He's receiving a national award, one of 11 recipients of the 2017 Distinguished Service Awards given by the National Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association, and that's a pretty impressive award when there's only 11 given nationally. And so Scott will be honored honorees will be recipients in December 12th in Phoenix. I'm not sure if he'll make it to the reception, but I'll be glad to go and accept on his behalf.
Since
they have great golf courses there. But anyway, congratulations to Mr. Morris and to the entire Savannah County athletic team. The solar farm progress is coming right along. This was actually a beautiful day up there to take a picture. It's hard to tell that's a solar farm from this angle, but you can see the solar panels low on the bottom of the screen here, and really came out as a beautiful day to take that picture. But it is a well hidden from any roadways and from the major public, but they're moving right along and finishing that solar farm completion. And then there's a bridge replacement public hearing. That's on the Deep Creek Road bridge over the Middle Fork Kent Branch. That's up in the northeast part of the county. You can see the dot in the right-hand corner. It's about right there, I think, on the map. I tried to match it up on the real map, and it's pretty close. But the public hearing will be in December, on December 13th, I think that says? 13th, at the library. And so that will be published in fan mail and on the website and other information, but you've also got the handout with you. We put a flyer for each one of you there in case you want to attend that. And that's also been sent out to our fire and rescue community. The county staff holiday party is on Friday, December 15th. There's the flyer there, and if you haven't gotten a flyer yet or a notification for your calendars, it'll be coming. And so we'd be delighted to have all of you join us for the holiday party. We actually got some good door prizes from the VACO conference this weekend when we won some raffles. That was good. And just a reminder, the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission legislative forum is coming up on Wednesday, November 29th. That's from 6 to 8:15 at the Alamar County Office Building. And if you don't have that on your calendars yet, let us know. We can send out, or Kelly, you can just send the one from mine to theirs, please, for the legislative forum. And that's on Wednesday, November 29th, 2 weeks from today. And then I just want to check on the date. I'd like to plan your planning retreat, biennial retreat after the elections for January. Now, you've got regular meetings on January 10th and January 17th, because they're condensed this year because of the holidays. But the Saturday that seems to be open is Saturday, January 20th. Would that work for your calendars? or would you like to check and see if that will work? It would be at the Fort Kennedy Community Center like last year, that, or like 2 years ago. That way we can plan on getting the new strategic initiatives up to date and figure out what your plans are for the coming couple of years.
Works for me.
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Okay, so we'll get it on your calendars, and then we'll get a tentative agenda out to you sometime in December, and then we start doing planning for that on the 20th of January and Saturday.
Did you say we had a flyer about the holiday gathering?
No, you got a flyer about the bridge
at
public hearing.
Okay.
The flyer for the for the staff holiday party will be to you when you come out of closed session.
Okay.
Thanks. And then here's your upcoming meetings. You've got your normal meetings in December, but remember December 6th meeting, towards the end of that, we're going to have a preliminary budget discussion. Talk about where the directions you want to head, talk a little bit about some forecasting, talk about some of the process for this year, and so that'll be at your December 6th meeting, then regular meeting on the 20th, and then January 10th, remember, normally it would be the 3rd, but because of the holiday, we pushed it to the 10th. That'll be your organizational meeting for chair, vice chair, and board and committee assignments, and then your regular meeting on January 17th, and then, of course, now your offsite on January 20th. Any questions I can answer for the board?
And do not forget, I will be out the 20th of December.
Okay, that's right.
That's
second
what I told meeting. You.
There will be some public hearings that night. I'll let you know which ones they are, and if there's something that you need the full board for, we can defer. But I think it'll be okay.
So. We talked about that before.
Right.
Unless something else has come up.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Nichols, sir. We will now open our first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time?
Yes, I'm Curtis Putnam, 16408 James Madison Highway, Columbia District. And I just wanted to show my support for a couple things on the agenda tonight. Specifically the Charlottesville Area Alliance Support Resolution. I met with the Alliance about 2 months ago. They're doing some wonderful work, drawing together some very important resources that Fluvanna wouldn't be able to access otherwise. And their goals and aims are very aligned with the Partnership for Aging, which I serve on. And I would appreciate you giving it a good consideration. Also, I wanted to show some support for the Shovel Ready program, which would put Fluvanna in a good position to provide shovel-ready sites for businesses to come to. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Putnam. Anyone else?
My name is Perry Johnson. I live at 5039 James Madison Highway. And although I'm going to speak to the request for school carryover funds, I do not officially represent the school board tonight. I'd just like to emphasize that I believe the school board understands that we have to temper our advocacy for our students with our responsibility to the taxpayers of Fluvanna. Because of this, we're not asking for the full amount of the carryover. And we put a lot of time and discussion into what we are asking for. It was not a simple vote to narrow it down to the improvements we most want to make for our students versus the improvements we know you want to make for all of Fluvanna. So I'm asking you to have confidence in the school board's commitment to our common goals and approve the carryover request tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Jerry Swigert. I live at 787 Taylor Ridge Way. I'm a member of the Economic Development Authority Board, the treasurer, in fact. I've been involved with all the pre-development work for the Shovel Ready program since Jason initiated these ideas. The EDA is very much supportive of this activity. We took a vote last meeting and we strongly supported the concept of giving a grant to to the applications instead of the loans. We believe that that will be more amenable to people being interested in doing it, and it will be a more a manageable program for the EDA. But in principle, the program is very forward-thinking, and I think it will put Fluvanna County in a very good position to start developing some of its property. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else wishing to speak, we'll close the first round of public comments. We have no public hearings, so we'll move forward with action matters. Q, Fluvanna Shovel Ready Site Programs, FSR. SP, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm going to go through this presentation again briefly. Feel free to interrupt me and ask questions as we go along. Not too much has changed since our last conversation. This is a partnership between the Economic Development Authority and our department, the Community and Economic Development Department in Fluvanna. The Virginia Business Ready Sites Program, there's a state funded program. We'll get to the next slide. We don't have the properties that qualify for that program. It's administered through the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. One of the characteristics that would qualify for this state program is it has to be at least 100 acres. So we've created a program of our own to work alongside EDP in the hopes of having sustainable properties for economic growth. This is just a quick snapshot of, this was probably taken about 2 months ago. I think we've added a couple more properties under the 100 acres. This is a quick snapshot of what developers would look at if they're looking for property in Fluvanna County. They would get on this website, and then it would basically tell them how many acres, they can even pull up a map to see where in the locality the property is located. So the Shovel Ready Site Program was talked about it probably about 5 or 6 months ago. This has been an ongoing development, as Jerry mentioned before. We've had several meetings. The last meeting, the EDA voted to move forward with the grant funded program, and I'll get to some more specifics later on. But essentially, this is going to help landowners and developers create a shovel ready site for their property, along with advocating the importance of rezoning other due diligence items like soil samples, testing, environmental studies, etc. Really, that's going to open the door for our department to then communicate with the community, our partners up there at Zion Crossroads. Quick investment to expansion. Companies want to open their doors tomorrow, not 2 years from now. Benefits, it's going to lower the cost of site development. Companies will be able to come in, look at these reports, make a better decision on choosing Fluvanna rather than taking a few months to look at other localities. We'll already have the basic information completed for them to make a better decision. Some of the details, going back to the state program that covers 100 acres and up, this would be 2 to 99 acres, this specific local program. The property needs to be within the planning area up at Zion Crossroads. We chose this because we're putting a big investment into that community already. This is 50 up to 50% of a match. Once we have verification, copies of invoices and receipts that the work has been done, then we can go ahead and move forward with the grant or loan. And then we've worked with Draper Aiden to create a tier checklist, essentially, from tier one means no zoning, nothing has been done. If we can work with a property owner to have their property rezoned, that automatically goes to tier three. And then based on the amount of applicants, we would then look at the amount of work that's been done, and then they would be awarded more or less the tier level that they're at, because we want all tier fives. We don't want tier ones, which is what we have right now. So some of the roles, the EDA and Economic Development Director, will be going out talking with residents. I've already made connections with several residents up at Design Crossroads there who are interested. They're just waiting for more specifics and details. But we would work with each landowner, explain to them the importance of some of these items that need to be done before a developer is going to even notice that we're open for business, and then work with them throughout the application process. Once we receive the application, I'll be working with the EDA to then make a decision on priorities. The rollout is ASAP. We'd like to have community luncheons in the next 4 to 6 weeks so we can roll out January 1st. So with that, I'll take suggestions, comments, questions.
Can tell me about the shovel-ready checklist. You're looking for people maybe in tier one?
Right.
So, and if those are in tier one, what happens to them? Do you help them?
That's the intention.
Okay.
So we're going to be reaching out to all landowners that are willing and able to sell the property.
Okay.
If we find out that they want to work with us, they're willing to sell, that's when we'll go into this conversation of the shelter site program. And the objective is to get as close as possible to tier five. Okay. Some folks might not have the money that it takes to go from one to five the first year, but maybe we can assist in 3 to 5 years, they're at a tier three or tier four.
Mm-hmm.
Every little bit helps. I'll give you a quick example. The family cemetery that's up along at the Glass property on the corner of 15 and 250. That's probably gonna have to be moved. There's state grants and opportunities available, but it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be an opportunity to provide a financial assistance to get some of that due diligence, some of that work done that normally just drive by and don't think of. We can take care of that now instead of 2 years from now. That could be the difference from somebody choosing 0.5 miles in Savannah and 0.5 up the road in Louisa.
And this is, the program is not to tell people what to do with their property. This is for willing property owners that are interested in marketing their property. Well, if they want to market their property for sale or lease or development of some type, their property, to be as marketable as it can be, needs to be as ready as it can be for sale. Just like you fix up your home or paint the outside of your house before you get ready to sell, things like that, there are due diligence steps that have to be taken. This program will help those property owners get ready to do that, but not bear a financial cost in taxes until the use changes.
And everything right now is one, for the most part, right? Because it has to have water and sewer to be above one.
Most is tier one.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could have some areas, just take the trees down, just level them. That looks good. At least we can see the grounds and see if it's buildable and how much work would need to be done.
What legal ramifications would you have in moving a cemetery?
Well, we have to work with the landowners and the family members.
Well, what if they don't want it moved?
It's a pretty involved process, and it's initiated typically by the landowner. You have to have the approval of the circuit court, and you have to have a plan of what you're going to do with it.
So they can do it whether you want it done or not, basically. Through the court and all.
No, the court authorizes it to be done at the application of the landowner.
The landowner has to ask for it.
Oh, okay.
The county's actually done it. Uh-huh. We did it in one instance over at, I think it was at the library. There was a family cemetery, or we thought there was a family cemetery. And we went through the court process to have the cemetery moved. Turns out it wasn't there, or there wasn't any, with no evidence.
So the landowner could say, I don't want it moved, and that would be it?
Oh, the landowner, yeah.
In this that's program, what I was wondering.
Yeah, this program, certainly, this is the program.
Jason's not saying that cemetery on the Glass property has to be moved.
Right.
If you were going to develop something, let's say Pine and Sky, a Home Depot wanted to move there.
Right.
It may need to move just because of physical space. Does the landowner want it moved? well, if the landowner doesn't want to move, maybe that development can't happen on that property.
Okay, that's so what I was
wondering. It's their choice. We just want to help find any possible way to make their property marketable in an area where we want to development to happen to help them get there.
You know, there are places around, I can't remember where I saw this, but there are places around where there was land, it was farmland, was developed for the shopping center or whatever it might be, and the cemetery was preserved in place.
I think that was in Charlotte along one of those roads or something.
I can't remember where.
I remember.
I remember seeing it in several places. Uh-huh. I can't remember where, but that's possible. But it's also possible that, you know, that land is very valuable a lot of times for commercial land and might be in a place that really takes up a disproportionate portion of the property, and it would be advantageous to the landowner to move it.
Maybe a better sample would be on the Williams and Alexander project property. We were walking and noticed that there was a cabin, and one of the owners had mentioned that he thought that there could be another house foundation at one point somewhere around the property. This program would allow us to work with the landowner who's willing to move forward and do some of these critical environmental tests. So if we did find that they were dumping the trash, which was the norm, dumping, you know, behind the house, then we would be able to pursue remediation grants. So it's probably a better example.
How fast can a landowner move from tier one to tier five? Unless you don't know, right?
It depends on if they have the financials and how fast they move.
Tier 1 and Tier 5 is a difficult proposition fast because Tier 5 requires a whole lot of stuff. And nobody's going to have water and sewer in until we get it in.
Yeah.
So that's one impediment to getting all the way to 5.
But
if you've done the perk testing, you've done environmentals, you've done wetland studies, and you've done some land clearing, that's a huge boon to get somebody recognizing that property is ready to go. Even if the water pipes are still coming, so.
At the VECO Economic Development presentation, they said that the number one reason why Virginia is losing opportunities, business opportunities, is because we don't have enough
shovel-ready sites.
That's the number one reason. So, you know, there are obviously places you can put shovel-ready sites that may not make a lot of sense, but I think all of us agree Zion's Crossroads is an area that makes a lot of sense.
And then on the policy, all this is in your package, but on the policy, just remember that what the program eligibility and the program process and stuff is laid out there, but what it really comes down to is on program expenditures. This was going to be using the $35,000 you had set aside as microloan funding that the EDA was given in 2012. It hasn't been used for that purpose because no one has applied for it and got approved for it. And this would be used, that money would be used for this new purpose, shovel-ready site program, but in one of two ways. If you want to make it a grant program, which the EDA and Economic Development Director would recommend, or do you want to make it a revolving loan program, which is certainly less attractive zoning, but there's a merit to that too. But $35,000 is not going to last for the next 10 years, but if it gets an inroad going, it could be helpful. Now, is there any legal ramification on grant versus loan for that area of the county only, or for a program like this, do you know?
Excuse me. The statute authorizes you to use either grants or loans.
Okay.
What about, who, are you the only person that will be helping the land owners move through the tier process? Do you have a plan on how, you know, I may be in land, I may start and I just let it go for a month or two. And are you going to call me? Are you going to have me come in? Or do you have a process that people will expect that the county is going to help them move through?
I'm going to call you.
Okay.
Send you a letter and see if we can meet.
All right.
And then explain that we have a program, if you're interested, how, you know, we can work together to get the property site ready.
Okay.
But remember, it's not our property. We can't tell them what they have to do. We can give them the list of things. We can facilitate. We can advise is too strong a word. We can inform, but we can't make them do it.
This is a way for us to help our citizens make their land
more valuable in an area where we want it.
And to help them get the, I hate to use the word, biggest bang for their buck, but the biggest bang for the buck if they do decide to sell.
And the best concentration
for us to force
buck.
Them to sell is
no,
designed for us to help them.
I've always thought that this was something that we should move forward on. And it makes sense. It's in the right area. And I think you've done a lot of work to get this together. And I'd like to make a motion when you're ready.
Are we doing it as a loan or a grant?
Well, the motion has both in there.
I'm in favor of it.
You can determine based on when you read the motion. And there's two motions. One is about the policy for this, and one is about changing the microloan program over to this, the dollar.
I think the challenge with it not being a loan is this is a relatively small amount of money.
So you want to keep it sort of going, perpetuating.
I want to keep it going because I think, you know, if we do it as a grant, then it'll come back as another funding request, which I would encourage the Economic Development Authority to come back because I think that number should grow to a more significant number overall. But we want to have a sense that, let's say every year we put in $35,000 for the next 5 or 10 years, as an example. By the time one of those properties sells and cycles back around, we'll have that $35,000. So we'll have created that self-funding mechanism so that we actually have the $350,000 or so that, you know, is available to us as that area grows. So whereas if we spend it, then it's gone, and, you know, we'll need bigger bangs for the buck because, you know, even at 50%, you know, as you know, it doesn't take a lot to chew up $35,000.
No, it doesn't.
So I'm much more in favor of it being a loan.
Well, and the landowner will have the money once they sell,
exactly. They'll have the money to pay back. And you're not talking about
a large
amount. You're talking about $5,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
Well, it is more onerous for the EDA to track loans rather than grants, but there is a good point to be made that the revolving style of this is good. And oh, by the way, by the time they have to pay it back, it's when the land use has changed and they've accrued their benefit out of it. So, and we may have to hound them to pay it back or something. You never know, sometimes. But I think in most cases, this is a benefit to our landowners in an area where we want it to be benefited.
So are you ready? I'll make a motion. I move at the board of, let me get over here so you can hear me. I move the Board of Supervisors to adopt the Levana Shovel Ready Sites Program policy to support economic development in the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area, and whereby the Levana County Economic Development Authority will manage and maintain the FSRSP as a interest-free loan program to support economic development in the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the realignment of $35,000 in funding from the Levana County Economic Development Authority's Business Microloan Program, originally approved in 2012, and thus terminating the microloan initiative, and to the Levana County Economic Development Authority's Levana's Shovel Ready Sites Program Fund.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger and seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Next is our Farm Heritage Museum update and construction contract. Ms. Toller.
Nope.
Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Toller. Mr. Toller had a surgical intervention last night, so she's not here today.
Oh, wow.
She's all watching him.
She's all taking care of us.
A surgical intervention.
So I'm here to give the board an update on the Farm Heritage Museum. One, just update on the progress and where we are, the funding aspect of it, and you know, if the board wants to move forward with the construction contract. So just a little recap of the history. In May 2017, we put out an invitation for bid. For design and construction of the building at the Farm Heritage Museum. One submission was received totaling $425,000. After discussions with contractors, the Historical Society, that bid was rejected just due to the cost aspect of it. In August 2017, a new invitation for bid was reissued with clear specifications and building plans issued. In October 2017, the new IFB closed with a total of three bids. The low bid was from Fogue/Interbuild Inc. for $307,114. So just a little brief about Fogue, Interbuild, leading contract company. They build lots of barns, wineries, custom homes, metal buildings, butler buildings. The project manager, John Schroeds, he has over 35 years of experience. If the board wants to move forward with this construction project and this project itself, it would take about 8 weeks to build from the time that a permit was issued. And then the building will be warranted for workmanship for 5 years. So just a little recap of some of the funding aspects. So in July 2016, the Historical Society raised and pledged a total of $160,824.73 to the budget of the project. Since then, they have raised an additional $109,600.27. So current, they're at $270,425. Of that, $470,000 was from grants, and the remaining dollars was all from citizens, businesses, donors to the Historical Society. One thing to talk about, and this is kind of one thing that the Historical Society kind of brought forward, that they would be interested in giving donations to the county for the next 5 years. Now, like I said, you know, as we talked about the whole softball thing, that's not something that's guaranteed. It's not something that's, you know, that we're going to require, but that's something that they're committing themselves to do, to donate $5,000 a year to the county, because on the next slide, the cost to complete this project has gone up. So that will, in the long term, defray the overall costs of it. And in addition, the county, through the nonprofit budgets, the county has given the Historical Society $525 a year as a contribution. They would refrain from seeking that contribution as well. So just a little bit about the funding. So originally, you can see right there, the county originally made a contribution of $15,000. That $15,000 was just enough to do the site plan for the project and where the building was anticipated of going. And when we talked about the Historical Society contribution, you can see here is a list of the grants broken down by anonymous residents, miscellaneous citizens, and business donations. So as I said, it was $270,425. So a combination with the county's original contribution of $15,000 and the Historical Society's $270,000 and some change comes to total funding of $285,425. As we said, the county paid $15,000 for the site plan. The Historical Society has already paid for the actual designs for the building for the 2425. The construction cost came in at $307,114, and just as a precaution, we added in a 5% construction contingency, which would bring the total cost to $339,895. So the difference of the funding that's already been committed versus total cost would be $54,470. And as I stated in the previous slide, you know, they would commit to giving $5,000 a year plus the $525. So we're talking, you know, roughly $28,000 over the next 5 years. So, you know, decrease that $54,000 by that amount. So that's kind of the background on the process, the funding. Mr. Moss is here to answer any questions as well, and then I can answer any questions on the process. So I'll let Mr. Moss speak really quick here.
Good evening, members of the board.
I think you've just gotten a very good summary of where we are. I realize that the funding is a bit confusing. We reduced the size of the museum considerably to lower the cost and changed the design. We paid for that design. And I just want to point out that only 70,000 of that 285,000 came from grants. The rest of it came from individuals and businesses. And I just want to thank Mary Tillman, who is here, and David Tillman and Carolyn Talley, who isn't here, who worked so hard to raise that money. We also have committed 50% of all the net profits from Old Farm Day each year to repay the county, but we have a firm commitment to meet the goal of giving the county $5,000 a year to defray the costs of this. I think this is going to be a terrific project. I think it's going to add immeasurably to the whole Pleasant Grove complex. The porch that is in front of the museum, which you'll see in the exhibit, can be used for a couple of purposes, including having vendors who will not have to put up tents anymore. They can actually be under the porch because it's right across, it's right along the main thoroughfare there in Pleasant Grove. And the second thing is that it can also improve, I believe, the rental of the Pleasant Grove House and Museum for weddings and other events, because people can actually use either the museum itself, or they can use the porch for part of that activity, perhaps in lieu of putting up a tent. So there are all kinds of positive things, I think, for the county that would come out of this. And I urge you tonight to do the final reckoning on this and close the funding gap with our commitment to you and to the county and to the people from the Historical Society to keep this going. We're very proud of what we've done, and I hope that all of you appreciate the importance of this project for the future of the county in so many different ways. And I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Anyone have a question?
Do you foresee the museum charging a fee or not?
What's that?
Do you foresee the museum charging a fee?
No. You know, the Pleasant Grove House doesn't charge a fee. The county does charge a fee for using the Pleasant Grove House for special events. I forget how much it is. Mr. Nichols, can you tell us that?
I can't tell you.
I think it's $35 for the house or in the area around the house.
Yeah. So if we make a little money off the Pleasant Grove House, I think that the county ought to probably raise the...
I was going to say, if we do weddings, we probably ought to raise that up a little bit, if we do like the under the porch. The
last time we tried to raise Parks and Rec fees, that was quite a hullabaloo from this board. Well, we'll bring it up again.
I don't think that's raising a fee. I think that's just setting a fee for... I know if anybody goes anywhere around the state, and I'm not trying to undercut people, but they're going to pay $4,000,
sure.
$5,000 to rent a venue.
If I were getting married in the next couple of weeks, I would rent the Pleasant Grove because I think it's a bargain.
$250.
Two more years, no. All right. One quick question I had.
Yeah.
I know this is going to sound terrible, but I'm a glass half full kind of guy. If you come in at budget or under budget, is there any way we could get the contingency money back? Or do you have plans for that?
Oh, no, that's your dollars.
That's
your dollars.
Yeah. Okay, all, so that already stays here. Good.
Yeah, all this, sir, is...
Oh, right.
All this is your money. That money goes to
the
your budget.
$54,000.
Yeah, no,
$54,000.
The entire...
And we will repay.
The whole thing.
Right. We will repay.
Comes into the county coffers.
We will repay it over a period of time.
Yes, sir. Right. Well, I'm fully believing it'll be under budget.
Yes, how many years have you all been raising funds for this project?
It's not quite. Mary Tillman, you know, she was a teenager when this started.
Well, she's only 29 now.
That's our saying, we work on things about 20 years
at a time. It didn't take as long as the Pleasant
Grove. What else are we going to talk about?
Pleasant Grove House took 10 years.
10 years, that's remarkable, the amount of money raised.
5+ years, I would say.
Yeah, that is remarkable.
All right, are there any other questions?
Just for Fred, is this, we can do this, we can?
Yes.
Okay.
Where is this in the county budget?
Okay.
Where is this $54,000 in this year's budget?
It's not.
Okay.
It's coming from contingency fund, right?
Well, you could come from BOS contingency, but if not, we'd have to pull a fund balance, but likely BOS contingency to begin with, but that's totally up to you. And again, you're not going to spend all that necessarily, because the contingency may not be needed, there may be more raised, but that's the dollars that are available for you to make a decision on whether you want to go forward with this project.
Well, that's what bothers me. I think it's a great project, but you know, that's the way it ends up. You start a fundraiser, do it for a couple years, and then you end up, county has to pick up the tab. Should the taxpayers pick it up like that?
I think with all of the support that they have had, and businesses and community people have donated, $200,000. That says to me that the community, I can't tell you how many, but that says to me there's community support for this project.
In general, to make this sound better, even though you make obviously an important point, Mr. Weaver, the $54,000 is essentially money fronted by the county.
Right.
Over the next 5 years, that $54,000 would go down to $27,000, and then you essentially add the $27,000 onto the $15,000 you gave before. So the county's total dollar commitment, besides staff time, to this project is about $42,000 out of a $340,000 budget.
And if the contingency is not used,
no, that's right, and that's another $15,000 off. So it may go down.
It'll be free.
May go down to $27,000.
I told you I'm a glass half full guy.
At 40%, I mean, at $40,000, it's 15% of the total budget of the project.
Let me just point out that with the Pleasant Grove House, the Historical Society and our county grants administrator raised $878,000. So that covered 77%. Total cost of Pleasant Grove House. This is going to cover a higher percentage of this project than we did for the Pleasant Grove House. We'll be providing about 80 to 81% of the total cost of this project.
Well, and I think the other part of it is that it is, again, if we're talking about developing agribusiness, agritourism, to follow up on Mr. Sheridan's idea of trying to make this an attractive place, for a place like Virginia Tech to maybe look at putting a program in. As we add different facilities and different activities to Pleasant Grove, we really make it an exciting destination point for people to come into Flavanna. And ultimately, I don't think we can measure those dollars today, but I would venture to say that the return on our $40,000 investment would be more than well paid back over a period of time. So I think this is a great project.
So we're looking at motion number two?
All three.
Okay, I see.
Remember, you're taking in additional money from the Historical Society from fundraising. You're saying the county's going to kick in 54 now, and you're going to say award the contract.
Right, okay.
I'll go.
Any more discussion?
Anyone else? Okay.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a FY18 supplemental appropriation of $109,627 to the Farm Heritage Museum Capital Improvement Plan budget due to additional fundraising efforts of the Flavanna Historical Society.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I said aye.
Okay.
I didn't say anything, but
I was waiting, Mr. Weaver.
But I'll approve that one. I'm not approving the county one.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve FY18.
Hold on. Let me finish the first one. So you voted aye also? Those opposed?
Yes.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. That motion passes 5-0.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a FY18 supplemental appropriation of $54,470 from the Fluvanna County unassigned fund balance. Or do we want to do a contingency fund?
No.
Okay. To the Farm Heritage Museum capital improvement plan budget.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-1.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the contract between Fluvanna County and Fogg Interbuild, Inc. for services associated with the construction of the Farm Heritage Museum totaling $307,114, and further authorize the county administrator to execute the agreement subject to the county attorney revisions for a proper agreement and approval as to form.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
I'm all right.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Somebody call Mr. May.
Thank you. Historical Society.
Can we do
the 500? Because we have the 550 members of the Historical Society, which is the largest membership organization in Fluvanna County. I want to thank all of you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for all your work, sir.
Hard work.
And for you folks in the back, especially the 29-year-old young lady in the back row. All right, S, FY17 to FY18 county carryover request. Ms. Marianne Twithday.
Mr. Chair, we're going to do both S and T as combined.
Okay. Nope.
Some briefings up front and talk about policy, and then you can decide on a cherry pick off those lists.
Good evening. I'm here tonight to discuss the FY17 to FY18 carryover request for the county as well as the schools. The county has a policy for carryover requests, and basically, in summary, it's the amounts necessary for continuation of operating projects or services. They may be requested by departments for reappropriation. Such requests will be specifically defined projects that cannot reasonably be started or completed prior to June 30th. So in other words, according to the policy, these were already budgeted items in FY17 that we could not complete or start for circumstances usually beyond our control, and that would be a carryover. Typically, there are four reasons that departments or agencies ask for carryovers. Again, project was started but could not be completed, or the project was not able to be started, and both of those meet county policy. There are also sometimes when agencies or departments request carryover for funds for capital projects or one-time special projects that were not funded in that year, or they want to carry over remaining funds from FY17 for unanticipated purposes that they didn't budget for in FY18. Those are sometimes requests. Based on where the way our county policy is written right now, they do not need county policy. So we'll start with the department carryover request. And there are people from those departments here to speak about those carryovers should you have any questions.
Let's go ahead and do the school brief first.
Okay.
And then we'll talk to the individual line items.
Present our carryover requests. I want to certainly appreciate Ms. Johnson coming and talking to you about how we're attempting to be really good stewards of the money and trying to make sure that we're using the money in the best way possible to benefit the students in the county. I think one of the big things that I want to point out at the beginning is that you know, several years ago we came to you and said our revenue fell short, and surprise, we need for the county to come up with additional revenue so that we can meet our budget appropriation, which is completely legal, and there are plenty of school divisions that decide we've been appropriated this amount of money, this is what we're going to spend, doesn't matter what our revenue has been. Of course, that puts you in a difficult position because you're left trying to fill in that gap. We've worked really hard to keep that from happening again, but with half of our budget coming from the state, it makes it difficult for us sometimes when we don't find out till sometime in April what our final enrollment account is, what's going to happen with the cruise bill, and how that's going to impact funding. And you know, depending on what's going on at the state level, those monies can go up or down either way. And so I do think that that's part of the issue that we run into. Part of what I'll talk about is some of these things are needs that we have within our school division, but there's certainly things that we're like, I equate it to in your home, you're going to buy groceries before you're going to buy a new car. So you've got to make sure everybody's fed up front, and then you're going to look at what are my other needs in my household. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what we talked about as a board and kind of where we are with things. So our expenditures for the 17 fiscal year, we had about $1.6 million left at the end of the year. We used about 95% of our budget. And then these are our revenues. And I talked a little bit about that state revenue number. We were at about 98% of the state revenue, 96% federal, and where we fell a little shorter than we budgeted was our other local revenue, which is things like, might be things like insurance claims or rebates or things like that that might come in. So some of the reasons behind some of the carryover funds that we saw is that we had about $500,000 in money that we got towards the end of the fiscal year that were a little bit of a surprise to us. One of them was class size reduction money. We hadn't qualified for several years, but we received a call from the state and they said, it looks like Flaviana benefits from these funds this year. Please complete this paperwork and turn that in. So we got those funds. There was also this fund called Enrollment Loss Fund or Small School Money that the governor's office came up with. And there was a lot of discussion going back and forth between the Department of Education in terms of how these funds were going to be allocated, the amounts that would be allocated. And this was really up in the air for a large portion of that spring semester before we actually found out exactly how much that was going to be. And then the other piece is that we had a slight increase in the enrollment in students from what we had budgeted. So that, of course, impacts our state revenue as well. And then the last thing is that we did have some software license renewals that we were actually told to move from. We had been renewing all of our renewals in June, and we were actually told to move them to July. But that meant that they were actually, those softwares weren't renewed during fiscal year 17, but they have since been renewed in 18. So again, it meant for there was a slight decrease in what our expenditures were. So those amount of $640,000 of what we have with carryover. This is our quote unquote automatic carryover request in terms of we have $434,000 in grants that were outstanding from one year to the next that we've submitted to be carried over for this year.
And that 434 is not being considered by you tonight.
No.
It's not in your dollars or the request. It's separate. It's just reporting that will be carried forward automatically because it's grant funding and funding that does carry forward.
Can you go back to that last slide, please?
Maybe. Okay.
I got you. Yes, sir.
I just wanted to finish reading it. I just wanted to finish reading it.
Oh, sorry.
And the VPSA is?
Virginia Public School Authority. It's specific funding for computers for testing and preparing kids for testing. So our proposed carryover request, we had some computers that we ordered in fiscal year 17, we were actually told, we were sure by Dell, those computers are going to get here before June 30, no worries. The computers arrived July 5th. That totaled about $149,000, and we know that the auditor rule is if you don't receive it in that fiscal year, then those funds go over to that fiscal year. And then we also had a bus replacement that we purchased with capital reserve funds. And with that particular case, that bus, the difference in the amount that was in the fund and an additional bus was $15,000 more. And so it made sense to us to purchase that additional bus for the $15,000 additional funding. But we would like to request that funds be returned to our fiscal year 18 budget since we hadn't planned for that expense.
So a note on those two. The computer stuff, anytime schools or us order something in one fiscal year, but it's not received to the following fiscal year, the cost is attributed to the following fiscal year. So they were going to spend money there, could not spend it there, had to spend it out of here. So carrying forward a cost to cover that is normal and makes sense because it was something done during this fiscal year that could not be finished. On the bus replacement, that's a little bit different, but the same kind of thing. They're trying to get the best value out of it, but that's for CIP dollars, not for capital reserve.
Oh, sorry, excuse me.
Well, that's okay.
What would have happened to that money, though, the year before? In other words, the budget then should be had that much left over then.
The 2017 budget has that much money left over.
Right.
And they're asking to move it over here to defray an expense in 18 that they didn't plan on spending in 18 because it was supposed to be spent last year. So the money's just following the purchase because the purchase was delayed, essentially, on those top two things on there.
But in theory, they could have spent whatever the money they had since the budget was there. I mean, legally.
You know, they tried to. They ordered the computers and $149,000 worth of computers or whatever.
Yeah, I understand that. But what I'm saying is they could have spent it on anything else in that category if they had wanted to in the previous year, even though it didn't get there in time. I'm not saying that they did, I'm just saying it could
have. That came out of CIP,
yes,
though.
Yeah.
Right.
Not the laptops. No, they bought those out of operational dollars, which is another conundrum, but that's a different discussion.
You couldn't have spent it. Because you had to spend everything.
No, they expected it would come in June, June 30th.
They didn't spend it. They were planning on spending it, but they didn't.
But they couldn't.
Yeah, and I know that.
Because they were waiting for the computers to receive.
Right.
When the computers didn't get received until after June 30th, no longer can you spend that money.
Right.
So it was left over.
The second area up there is vehicle replacement. We would like to request $50,000 in... this is partly for maintenance vehicles for our staff, but also student transport vehicles. Again, we tried to purchase a student transport van at the end of the fiscal year. We actually started trying to purchase a van through one of our state contract vendors, and they didn't have any available and said we won't have any available till August. Well, again, that doesn't help us there. We were hoping that an expense such as that would help us to defray some costs with student transport, particularly for smaller sports teams that we have, a group like Battle of Brains when they travel to Richmond. You only have about 8 or 9 kids that you're taking, and you can take them in a van as long as it's a 9-passenger van. That is opposed to taking a full school bus where you have many, many empty seats, and of course those buses get about 6 miles to the gallon.
Where do you always hold that contest? You're now talking about
Battle of the Brains. Battle of the Brains is always in Richmond at the Channel 6 news station.
Used to be some in Charlottesville, but I mean here in Fluvanna, because I've gone to some of those.
That's the academic team, the ACE team. That is still held.
Okay.
Yeah, it's two different things.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
The ACE team will be like a basketball, football.
Yeah.
They'll go home one time and away one time.
Yeah, same sort of thing.
So that vehicle was supposed to be paid for in 17?
That was our plan, is that we had planned to try to buy those vans, and we just weren't able to. Like I said, we started soliciting a vendor, and they were like, we don't have any of them available, we can't get them, and you know.
But it wasn't
nice enough,
in your budget.
They said, we can get one for you in August. No, that's not really helping. And then the third topic here is school bus replacement. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the school bus replacement cycle and kind of where we are with that, but we would like to request 3 additional buses, and then technology needs in terms of additional Chromebook carts and instructional technology, and also working on adjustments to our personnel compensation schedules. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about those.
One note about the vehicles and the computers. You've got a little bit of a conundrum on this on a recurring basis. If you're going to put dollars into CIP for technology, but the schools are also buying technology out of operational budget, now you've got a line item coming out of 2 different kinds of budgets. Same with vehicles. You normally, by policy, vehicles, forget school buses and the big costs and the fire trucks. School vehicles, county vehicles, sheriff's vehicles normally come out of CIP by your policy. If the schools are buying regular vehicles out of operational dollars, then now you've got two different sets of pots, money covering stuff. And I don't know which way you need to go, but I think you ought to think about, at least during this budget season, realigning that policy. And if you want the schools to buy their own stuff out of their own budget, then slide all over there and have it come costed to the cost per pupil expense. But I'm uncomfortable with continuing to buy capital items out of capital dollars, which are recurring dollars. They stay with the item till it's done, and buying capital items as available out of operational dollars. So just keep that in mind.
Well, wouldn't there be an advantage on having it on the other side so that you would have the capital going towards the cost per pupil? In other words, you see those lineups with all the adjoining counties and all, and if the rest of them use that as cost per pupil, why shouldn't we?
Well, then that's a good philosophical discussion to have, Mr. Weaver, but I don't know, and maybe the schools do, I don't know what school systems count in what, and I know it's variable around the state, but I don't know what our comparable school systems around here do, and that's something the school system would have to answer, sir.
And I think one of the challenges around that, and I'm not trying to take anything away from the hard work that the schools do, but you know, if the budget is tight for the schools, you know, the natural default in their budgeting process, I think, is to try to meet the needs of staffing as opposed to some of the other needs. Whereas when it's directed in the CIP, they can't actually do that. So, you know, if we're trying to meet a need for increasing technology, then by having it in the CIP, you almost guarantee that. Whereas if you have it in the school budget, there is no real guarantee behind that. I will note the Planning Commission recommended that it become an operational expense for computers specifically. I argued against that for that specific reason. You know, the argument being that computers are the equivalent of pencils today. So I don't know, maybe Ms. Gillen wants to comment as to whether or not, you know, some of that debate it has led to it being in essentially both pots, the operational and the CIP, from that standpoint. So.
Well, I believe there's really multiple issues going on. One is that if the schools feel that the CIP is not sufficient to meet all of the needs, then our hand is kind of forced in terms of building those into our operational budget. But you're absolutely right. Our first priority is going to be making sure that all of our staff are getting paid.
And I should note that the original request for laptops, I believe, was $1 million, not $600,000. Tribute or something like that.
Well, originally, they asked for $600,000.
We gave $300,000
in perpetuity. It came down to $300,000.
That's right. Yeah.
You're all with that.
We funded lower than that in some years, but it was original ask was $600 a year, changed to $300, and then sometimes you fund that or less.
Yeah.
But
right. You're always going with technology. You're always going to have it come as long as you continue to keep it in the CIP. You're always going to have it coming out of two pots. Because some of the money we get from the state is designated specifically to technology.
Right. And it's hard to imagine that's a capital item.
Right. So it's
500 of them.
So it's that kind of thing is always going to happen. We also purchase like instructional technology tools that might be used, assistive technology for special needs students, that sort of thing, that are going to be purchased with special ed funds, and some of our grants are specific to those. So you're always going to have that if you continue to fund it out of the capital lines.
So what about the school buses though? How does that play?
Well, you do actually get some state funding for school buses. There's a little bit of money in this basic aid line as well. So there is some money there for school buses.
What percentage would you say that is that it meets your needs? That money that you get a little bit extra, you say? I mean, like 10% of the total fleet that you might be asking for each year?
I would have to go back and look. I can't tell you that specifically off the top of my head. But when we get to the slide that speaks to buses, you're going to see kind of where we've had this kind of build up, where we haven't been able to do exactly what we needed to do year by year. So I'll talk to you a little bit more about that. But I will definitely research what the exact dollar amount is and get it back to you. So for maintenance vehicle needs, kind of one of the things we're running into right now is we have older vehicles that we do use to do things like push snow and that sort of thing. So these are, you know, heavy-duty trucks that have plows. You know that we ordered some trucks several years ago, and they took, probably 2 years ago, and they took about 4 to 6 months to come in. So again, this is not something we can decide in April, May, oh look, we have funding that we can do this, because the trucks won't get here in time, or we really can't run that risk and have you on the hook for that if we're not able to meet our revenue. And we're kind of in a position now, there are lots of emails that go back and forth between my office and the bus garage talking about this truck is this old, this is the repairs that it needs, and this really applies to trucks and buses. Do you want me to fix it? Because at this point, this particular truck up here it needs $600,000 worth of repairs to pass inspection, and the truck is valued at $1,000.
That's 20 years old.
And then we have another truck. We did put in the repair costs for it, but we've replaced the transmission and the radiator. And of course, you know, I'd like to think those things are going to last a long time, but just we know that this is kind of the discussion that we have repeatedly is, are we going to fix it? Is it worth fixing?
Is that the $20,000 one that you're talking about?
I'm sorry?
Is that the $20,000 one you're talking about? There was one truck.
We requested 50 for vehicles, and it would be some student transport, but also for these maintenance trucks as well.
Roughly, how underfunded is your vehicle replacement cycle?
Well, we're going to talk about buses now. And so I basically broken this out into two columns for you. So on the left-hand side, these are all of the buses that currently meet the replacement cycle qualifications. And on the right-hand side, you will see these are all of the buses. These 20 buses are outside the recommended 15-year replacement cycle. And these are only buses that are on the road every day. That's all that's on this list. So we have a total of 66 buses that are on the road every day. We do have actually 68 routes, but because we can't find enough bus drivers, we actually are only running 66 buses per day. And the issue is that, you know, if you look through the list, it's not, I think it gives you some ideas to how many were bought in that given year, but I want to point out, like in 2016, you did actually buy 5 buses, but because we bought them so late in the year, there were 2017 buses that we purchased.
So that's why it's 10 on 17.
I'm sorry?
That's why there's 10 on 17.
Right. So I just kind of wanted to point that out. So, you know, this kind of gives you an indication as to how many we bought per year, but again, it's not, you know, it's not an exact science, and there have been times where we bought used buses when we needed to just to reduce the cost. But you kind of see that when the economy took a downturn in 2010, we have no 2010, we have no 2011, and we have one 2012. So you kind of see where we stopped purchasing as many buses as we had been over the course of the year. And so this is kind of where we are. In the CIP request, we have requested 6 buses each year for the next 4 years, which will give you 24 buses. But by the time that request goes all the way through those 4 years, then these ones on the left-hand side start to turn gray because those buses are going out. And we are running into the same issue that I talked about with the vehicles, where it's like the motor's gone in this bus. What do you want me to do with it? Do you want me to fix it? I will tell you, we are probably doing a really good job of generating revenue for Mr. Wagner. It does cost $650 to tow a bus, and I know that because we've done that about 5 times this year.
Wow.
So I really do see this as being a need. I certainly understand, that you're kind of balancing what everybody's needs are, but this certainly is an issue. And I know last month when I was here, we talked about, a family that had that were pleased with the bus stop sign up at Zion Crossroads. Well, one of the things we did is we actually flipped out one of our older buses that was running that route with one of our newer buses because they have the 2 stop arms on them, one in the front and one in the back, mm-hmm. to make that stop safer for that student. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the issue is we are kind of making switches where we can. Where we might have kids on the bus for longer times, maybe using the newer buses for that. When we take athletic trips, trying to use newer buses for those as well. But it is kind of a balancing act, and honestly, we have a fabulous bus garage and maintenance staff down there that's working really hard to make sure that those things can stay on the road as much as possible. If you drive down by the bus garage, you'll probably be like, well, they have a lot more buses than what's on that list. that's because a lot of them out there are, we cannibalize them is what I call it. we save them and we save, and Mr. Wagner's funny, we were talking the other day, he's like, I really don't want to scrap this bus because I might need something off of
right.
it. So we do try to, you know, we keep, the, because it's hard to find parts for these older buses. Mm-hmm. Some of them are the smaller special ed buses, and you might go, well, those would be a little bit cheaper because they're smaller. They're not, because they have lifts on them and they have ties on them, so that makes them actually a more expensive bus. And one of these older buses is actually one of those special ed buses as well. So this is obviously something that we see as being a big need, and I know that, you know, we talk about that every year when we do the capital request, but it is definitely something that I think we need to consider in terms of talking about this. But I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
What ties? You mentioned ties. What are ties?
Like when you have a wheelchair go on the bus and you have to secure it. Sorry.
And
we don't tie people to the bus.
Right. I just didn't have to make
yeah,
sense.
Sorry. I appreciate you asking.
And the recommended 15-year replacement cycle, where is that recommendation coming
from? That comes from the state.
Okay.
And part of that is driven by the fact, like I said, that, you know, the you know, it's like anything else. It's, you know, we don't make that part anymore because we kind of don't want you to keep something old. I think that's part of what happens on the bus manufacturer side of things as well.
Are there additional insurance costs for running older buses or not?
Not that I'm aware of.
That's a good question.
Theoretically, higher liability, right?
Okay.
Right. And I certainly don't want to imply that the buses don't meet safety regulations.
Well, I mean liability if somebody gets hurt or something.
Yeah, right. Used to drive bus 38 every ball game, baby. Like I wrote it.
All right, a couple quick questions.
Yeah.
All right. It says 46 of the 15-year-old and younger buses are on the bus routes. Read the Louisiana Review article. Now, that may have been wrong. If it was, please correct me. It said y'all had 68 buses that were 15 years and younger.
I can't
really okay, that's the article that I read.
We verified all these numbers before I brought them to you.
Okay, this one's the ones that are on daily routes, but
right.
I'm just wondering.
Right.
I know that we have one for athletics, 64.
Yeah, I took out any of the buses that we had for athletics or things like that. I didn't put them into this count at all.
Yeah,
this is just ones that are on daily rounds.
Because the white bus, I think, is kind of old. I'm not sure.
I
haven't
think it is.
I haven't looked at that
one.
Bought
it used and got it repainted.
Mm-hmm.
That sort
yes,
of
ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the article that I, when I read that article, it had 68 buses 15 years and younger. And I know sometimes bus drivers, and I'm one of them, will get comfortable driving a certain bus, and they like to keep driving that bus.
I know.
But,
we've had
trust
those conversations
me,
I've
had that with them, and
don't
I've seen them. No, I like my bus. Take it, give me my bus back. But that was my biggest question.
Right.
Is you got 46 buses on the routes that are 15 years old and younger,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you said now they said you only had 60 on a route every day, but you said 66. And the 20 is one number off, I think, unless something's wrong. I think I counted 19 in the gray.
I
could have added
wrong.
I could have added wrong, trust me. I'm in the gym for a reason. But, okay.
My apologies.
No. All right, any other questions for anyone?
So the technology, we kind of already talked about this a little bit. Last month you had people talking to you about internet access and broadband internet. One of the things that I'm certainly passionate about is that we have students that do not have internet in their homes and cannot get internet in their homes. Either they're in an area where it's remote or it's a cost issue. The only time those students are going to learn how to use a computer and use the internet is in our schools. So if we're not offering that opportunity to them, they end up out of they're going to be behind when they go to the next level, whether it's going to a job or whether it's going on to a 2-year or 4-year school. The first thing they're going to ask you when you enroll in a 4-year school is go buy your computer, log on, and pick all your classes online. If you do not know how to do that, you are going to be behind from the start.
Do you know how many students in the school system do not, cannot get internet? Wouldn't that be a better, just not an argument, but wouldn't it be?
Well, this is what we just talked about in the steering committee, education steering committee. Is, you know, they were sitting there talking about test scores and everyone, well, everybody's got to be equal, and I raised my hands. What if you got 80% of your county that has unreliable internet access?
Yeah.
I said, that's where we are.
Right.
I said, but we're also one of 22 that are fully accredited for the last 4 years. So.
And it's more about, I think, helping kids to be successful at that next level. And one of the, we do graduate surveys, and one of the things we find from our students is kids that participated in those computer programs through our CTE offerings, business classes, and that sort of thing, they feel more prepared technology-wise before they get to the next level versus kids that didn't have those opportunities. And in the past, honestly, before we started doing our Chromebook initiative, there were kids that maybe went through an honors track or an advanced studies track that didn't touch computers unless they were in governor's school, which is a limited role enrollment program. So I'll just be honest with you. This is one of the areas I feel really passionate about. I have been working with George Washington University with a grant for cybersecurity, and she was talking to me about what the challenges are of rural communities. And I said, the biggest challenge we have is internet access. And I said, it's not like our kids can go to McDonald's or Starbucks and get on the internet like they could in the city. That's not really an option for them. And you may have heard me talk before about kids that we've had at the high school that actually set up campsites in the parking lot of the Fluvanna County Public Library, because you can get the internet if you're in the parking lot, and they needed to do work after school.
Right.
And I'm like, I get it shouldn't be that way just because we don't have that opportunity. So I want to make sure this is something for sure. So as much technology as we can embed in our daily curriculum, the better. And it is difficult when teachers are sharing things like Chromebook cards, and I'm sure you've heard some of that too, to prepare a lesson when you're not sure if you're going to have the resources to do the lesson or not.
Which schools are short on computers now?
Actually, Mr. Gifford and I do what we call a tech tour every year, and I think you maybe have been a part of those in the past, where we come around and just ask people, you know, what are your needs, what kinds of things would you like to have, and we hear constantly that we need more computers and more technology, and that comes from really every building. The high school has a lot of computers, but they have a lot of computer labs that are dedicated to specific programs, like our pre-engineering programs, and in our keyboarding classes, they have labs set up where kids do have access if they're in that class. But where the issue lies is when you're in an English class or in a math class and you want to use that tool as part of your lesson, it's just difficult to do. So it's certainly something that we keep looking at. We're certainly not at a place where we're in a one-on-one initiative, but you know that there are lots of neighboring school divisions that are in one-on-one initiatives. Any other questions about that? Sorry. So adjustments to personnel compensation. One of the things that we know is that there is a nationwide teacher shortage. And not that salary is everything, but certainly it is something that people consider when they're looking for jobs. And we instituted two scales back in 2014 when we had so many issues with our current scale and not having it be cost efficient for us, knowing that we couldn't afford the scale. We had frozen people on steps for many years, and because we had people anywhere from 0 to 5 years that were making the same amount of money because they had not gotten a raise in 5 years. So what we've been doing is we've had these two scales, A and B, and B is the new scale. It's for anyone who comes in new to us. So actually A only starts at step 12 now, and so B is anybody that comes in new to us. So we do have about 153 licensed staff on A, and so those are people that have been with us since 2014, and then we have 120 that are on scale B. We do have 40 staff members who were on scale A, but we didn't grandfather them into scale B, and so those people went from being on the A scale to the B scale. That particularly is a bone of contention because it could be that if you're just 1 year difference in experience than I am, you might make make $7,000 more than what I make in some of our steps. And so that is definitely something that causes some morale issues and something we get feedback about a lot. Now, we are mindful that we want to make sure that we aren't creating a scale that we, again, can't afford as a county, but we do want to try to reduce this issue of close that gap on lifetime earnings. So we've been looking at the lifetime earnings and trying to make adjustments. So when we very first started the scale, the difference in lifetime earnings was $120,000, and now we have it down to about $80,000. And basically our plan with these funds would be to help reduce that gap down to $60,000. Do you have any questions about that?
How much money do you need to go to one scale?
More than our carrier fund balance.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's not, the thing is, the first year, it's not that expensive, mm-hmm. but if you cost out that lifetime earnings is
right.
where it really starts to bump up.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
that's been the issue, and it's certainly something that we continue to look at, and you know, we have lots of conversations about, and you know, it's just one of those things where you kind of try to look down the road and not set up the next person for something that they're not going to be able to do.
The easy math would be 120 people times 80,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the current numbers would be.
Yeah.
Because that's what the gap is in lifetime earnings. And if you kept those people, the 120, they're on scale
B. Yeah, but that's over 30 years.
Right. No, but for anybody filling that slot, the difference is $80,000 over a lifetime for a scale B person. And there's 120 people in that category.
Now, obviously, if we continue to continue our practice of new people go on scale B and existing people on scale A, eventually they will retire.
And
of course, I know we do have a teacher with 48 years experience.
Mm-hmm. And you have 153 on A.
You're right.
Okay, let's hope that 100 of them at the top of the scale. No, because then you can't find the teachers.
Well, yeah,
be
so
careful
that's the other issue. So regardless of, I mean, teachers are harder and harder to find.
Very near the end.
Okay, so basically this is a synopsis of what we're requesting from the fund balance. The board was very sensitive when they were talking about this and that they didn't feel like they wanted to ask for the entire amount back. They did want to be mindful of knowing that you had other needs, and we do appreciate anything that you're able to do for us, but these, as you can see, these are real needs for us. This is not something where it's like, oh, we'd really love to have. These are real needs. Any other questions?
Can you explain the Chromebook carts? What actually is that?
Sure. So,
I don't know this technology. So
I should have taken a picture of them for you.
Yeah, so basically it's a mobile cart that has 30 to 35 slots in it where the computers actually plug into it so you can charge them that way. And then the kids just pull them out and use them and then put them back into the cart. So it's each one of them holds, you can buy them different sizes. Typically we buy sets of 35. So
you can move them around different classrooms and maybe have several in the classroom, whatever.
Right, absolutely. Uh-huh. And that's what we do now, is like we might have four or five teachers sharing a cart.
Okay.
But the issue is when you have that many people sharing a cart, it's just hard to, you know, you can schedule it, of course, but if you're planning a lesson and you're like, gee, I'd really love to do this, oh, wait, can I get the cart that day? That's kind of where the holdup is.
I think we're at a one-to-one ratio on this. I don't know. I think when you count because when we test, I know we have the ability to have everybody have a computer. I don't know if we're bringing them in from somewhere else or not.
I think sometimes you're using some of your labs.
That is counting
and
the labs.
You're not testing everybody. You're not testing all of your students on the same day. So you usually test like a grade level. You might test all of your fifth graders. We do try to put one-to-one in our English classes in the middle school and the high school, because that's where they're doing a lot of their intensive writing assignments and those sorts of things. So we want to make sure we have computers there. But where the issue is those outlying, like science or math, those kinds of sorts of classes where they're sharing. Social studies,
that's
why.
We have neat little carts now that have little carry cases that hold like six or eight of them. They can, you go reach in and grab a little case and pull out about six.
So I guess the question, Mr. Nichols, is out of the items listed there, which ones fall under the policy and which ones not?
The top one is the only one that clearly falls into policy. Those were things that were done intended to be done and funded in 17, but could not be completed until after the fiscal year was over. And so they had to spend fiscal year $18 to do it, unexpectedly for something that had already been funded in 17. So that 165 would meet your normal policy of carry forward. The others are essentially individual funding requests that we had some money left over last year. Oh, by the way, we need this. And so there's a nexus of, we had some funding left over, it went back to fund balance, because the money's already gone to fund balance. And oh, by the way, we have some special needs. So it might be reasonable to consider those two numbers together, but they don't meet policy for carry forwards.
And then, not that CIP is decided by any means, but certainly the vehicle bus, the school buses, and the additional technologies could all fall back into fund balance and then into the CIP and then reallocate it from that standpoint and essentially fall under policy from that end, whereas...
Yeah, so for instance, Ms. Gellman and I talked about this yesterday. Let's assume that Department A is requesting $100,000 of vehicles in the CIP. And a few months earlier, because they have a more urgent need, sometimes you approve things in advance because of school year, because of trying to get construction done during summer breaks and things. So let's say they have an earlier need and they come to you and say they want $50,000 now. What you've normally done in the past is said, okay, is that going to offset the $100,000 request here? So this was 100, it goes down to 50 because you give them 50 early. That's just a financing and a timing sequence one. These are additional requests in addition to what's in the CIP request now. So what I've asked the schools to do is if they need, let's say they needed 9 buses to catch up and they're asking for 5 now and 4 in the budget year, ask for all 9 in the budget year. And if you can get them early and you can tie it to we had some funds left over, then there's maybe a nexus there. But truly, you need to be asking for what you need to catch up. If the board approves something early, then so be it. And we can then reduce this number. So we're probably going to adjust their number, depending on what you approve, to make sure that they're on track with the right number. Whether you fund it or not, you should be requesting what the full need is.
We're just starting now to go into the CIP for the next year. Why wouldn't these be covered under the new CIP?
Well, they certainly could be part of the school's CIP request for fiscal year 19. Mm-hmm. There's two dynamics here, I believe. A, sometimes you need something earlier than you could get it out of the budget because it's just a matter of timing, you know, whether it's a construction thing or not. Secondly, the schools rightfully says, oh, by the way, we didn't spend all our money last year. We have some special needs. We'd like to use some of the money for that. I'm not suggesting that's right or wrong. I'm just telling you that that's not in your current policy. It's not that you haven't approved some of those things before in the past. It just isn't in your current policy. Normally, carryovers are specifically for things that were budgeted, approved, and just couldn't get spent or all the way done, and you're just letting the money go forward for the purpose that you already approved. Anything else that was left at the end of the fiscal year that wasn't expended just goes back into fund balance. And frankly, county departments, schools, everybody ought to just come in then with a request. Maybe it's July 5th, maybe it's August 31st, whenever it is, and say, I have a special need, it's out of budget cycle, but here's why I need it now. And then the board can make those decisions. And you do that periodically throughout the year. But of these, the top one is the only one that meets your current policy about carryover requests of dollars.
All right, I'm going to ask a question. You may not be able to answer this. No, I'm not trying to hit you with...
No, it's okay.
I know that one of the maintenance guys riding around in an SUV, his truck died, and I'm sure that's the one you're talking about. It's worth $1,000. It needs six.
Yes.
How many trucks do you have right now between you and Mr. Scriblin, if y'all can figure this one out, that have the capability of pushing snow since we require you to clean your own roads?
It's really just the...
Do you know Mr. Scriblin?
Two, with one of the trucks that we were talking about.
That we were talking about has been worked on.
The transmission of the undercarriage is riding out. So two, but we usually have four total, two of which are not...
But that would be one thing that I would see right now. I don't even know if you could get it by the time snow season got here, but that would be something that I would think would possibly be a request we need.
Is that the $50,000?
Well, that's part of the $50,000.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how much a truck would be to get to push snow, but that's something that I could see being a need now. And hopefully we don't have 2 feet of snow five times this year.
Now, is the plow that's on the front of this vehicle still work?
Ma'am?
The plow that's on this vehicle that's only
$5,000. If y'all got a new truck, you could use the old plow.
We could use the old plow, absolutely.
Okay. And, but you don't have another truck that you could transfer that plow to?
None that is heavy duty enough to do what we need that's safe to do that.
That you won't tear up quickly.
And that it wears on your transmission, it wears on your back end. I mean, you have to have, it's recommended that you have a 250 at least, mm-hmm. So I could put one on a 150, but it's going to tear it up in a couple of months.
I just want to say that, you know, it's like I started out with two things I want to talk about. One is we have applied for an EPA rebate program for diesel vehicles. It is a lottery-type program, so we're not sure that we'll get funding for it, but basically if you take older diesel buses out of service and purchase newer buses, that they will give you a rebate for those buses, and that rebate would be about $20,000 per bus. So in our application, we did say that we could potentially take seven buses out of service if we could replace them with seven new buses. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to tell you, we can't do that unless we're able to replace them, because for the EPA rebate program, those buses have to actually have been in service and be movable buses. They even talk about they have to move in all directions. You can't say, you know, I've got this shell of a bus here that I'm making scrap. Yeah. So that's part of their program, but that is something that we've applied for. Hopefully we will get that. The other thing I just want to reiterate that I talked about at the very beginning is I want you to remember that we worked really hard to make sure that we weren't doing our entire expenditure authority without first knowing that we had revenue. If we operate in that way, we will have carryover.
Right.
And I think you would rather me have carryover and come back to you and say we still have these needs versus coming to you and saying, oops, we didn't get as much money from the state as we thought we were. Can you? You're going to need to write us a check.
And so that's,
you know, I do kind of want you to understand we're trying to be good stewards and be mindful of all of that and not put you in that position.
Are you going for the seven buses in which you get a rebate of $20,000 apiece?
Well, that's
over 2 years.
Actually, it would be for what we had hoped, and we had to submit the application with as many as we could, and then you can scale back and say it turns out we were only able to buy three, and so you could scale that back. But we were hoping that with these three buses and ones in the CIP that we would be able to do seven was our plan, but obviously that's contingent upon funding.
When you were showing the slide for the buses, you missed 2013, which was also at zero, so it was 0010. So in a 4-year cycle, you only replace one bus.
Right.
But didn't we have money in there and you didn't use it? Or I can't imagine that we'd go that long and not give you buses, per se.
Oh, it was definitely not long that long. In 2009, 10, 11, a lot of the stuff was not cut at all. In 2012, fiscal year 2013 budget is when you all decided, the board at that time decided, to put dollars into sheriff's CIP,
right,
for sheriff's vehicles, and bus line, as well as the capital reserve. But before that, it hadn't been funded. Even since then, it hasn't been funded every year.
the other thing, you
there
know,
just
like
hasn't been, just haven't had enough in the CIP, or enough in your coffers to be able to fund all of, or even all of, or even every item in the CIP. A lot of things weren't funded. So that's why those numbers are off there.
And
they
like
can't
said,
spend that money on anything else besides bus.
Like I said, the other issue is that there were years that you bought used buses, and so they're not going to show up in that year per se. Like I know 2 years ago that 2002 bus was purchased as a cost saving measure because we needed another bus. Obviously now it's on the replacement cycle.
So we have not had requests like that that did not fall within our carryover policy, right?
No,
in the past, we have. Which ones did we have? Did we have any last year?
For things that were bought out of end of year money that didn't fall in policy?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, what were they?
$303,000 worth of stuff last year you all approved.
The internet.
Okay.
There's 334 Pleasant Grove Road.
Right.
There was, which is the 98,000 has not been spent. There was Intergov project, which was about 84,000.
About 50,000 for the
so yeah, the
excavator, yeah, whatever that thing
yeah.
is.
So if we know these kind of issues are going to come up, why don't we change policy?
Well, here's my recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I think this has been fuzzy and hazy all along,
yeah,
and I think it's the wrong way to do business. I think you ought to reiterate your policy
right.
that carry forwards from
yes.
this fiscal year to next fiscal year
mm-hmm.
are for
mm-hmm.
things that were budgeted and approved
right.
that couldn't be finished.
Mm-hmm.
End of discussion. Now, break. On July 5th, August 31st, anytime through the year, if someone, a department, a constitutional officer, the schools, whatever, has a need that has arisen, a new or unanticipated or pop-up need or emergency need, then they come to the board and ask for X dollars. Now, that dollars may come from personnel contingency, it may come from BOS contingency, it may come from general fund balance. At the same time, they could say, oh, by the way, I put $50,000 back into the general fund at the end of the year last year because we didn't spend all that. But there's no tie together on those two things. It's just, it's been played pretty loosey-goosey over the years. These requests, if this weren't carryover time of the year, these requests could have come on July 10th, and the schools could have said, hey, here's a really important need, and they could have laid out the rationale, and you all could have made a decision. It's not tied at all to carryover money. But it has been quasi-squishy practice to consider those kinds of things. I just think it's time for you to tighten up your policy and let the request stand on their standalone merit. And if you think it's a good out-of-cycle budget request that's a new need or an unanticipated need, then approve it, like you have in the past many times.
Right.
If I may add a statement here, I've had repeated meetings with the county administrator's office, and prior to yesterday, I was told to present this request as a carryover fund request and to do it at this meeting.
That's a little different than what we actually said. We said you can present it there, but if you're going to present it, you have a more likely chance of getting approved if it's a CIP item rather than a operational item. We've never said that any of these operational items are reasonable to get approved because the board doesn't normally approve operational funds carryover. They approve CIP carryovers.
Well, I think one of the challenges is, you know, as our fund balance has shrank and it's continuing to shrink, you know, and then looking at the many, many CIP requests that are coming in, it's a natural tendency, and I don't disagree with what you're saying about the fact that if you're doing your job and you're doing it well and some money comes back and then you feel like you get punished because you did your job well. I understand that. It's just, you know, it's always easy to, I guess it's, I don't want to say it's always easy. We look, in a sense, to solve today's problems, and then we start looking at tomorrow's problems, and those tomorrow's problems can seem a little daunting. And so, you know, that's where you're, I think, maybe experiencing some friction from that standpoint.
We've had lots of conversations about this, and I'm not suggesting that we didn't say, you can put in a carryover request. The framework is that operational things normally don't get approved. The other two, the 165, that's clearly within policy. The other stuff, if you put it in CIP, it's much more likely to be considered by the board because they've considered those things in the past.
But to Ms. Hill's point as well, you know, the opportunity perhaps with these, and granted they're not guaranteed, with the EPA funds is very attractive. And to try to leverage that, it sounds like there is, you know, to the point you made as well, that there are some timing issues related to that. And as Mr. Sheridan just pointed out, you know, perhaps some timing issues related to some of the vehicle replacement. So, I mean, we know these are needs. There's no, I mean, it's been well laid out that these are needs. You know, the challenge is, you know, how much of those can we fund, you know, through a carryover request as opposed to then waiting and pushing them off through the CIP and then potentially missing out on these funds. And I would assume that when you make a, could be assuming incorrectly, when you're making an application to that grant, the more vehicles you have in that grant, the more likely you are to get it, because it's kind of a one-time
I don't know thing. That it has as much to do with that as it sounds like it's more of a, they do a regional lottery, and so it kind of depends on the other schools in those, the other school divisions in those EPA regions that apply. So I don't have any indication in terms of how likely we are to receive those funds, but certainly that was something we felt incumbent upon us to try to recoup if we were able to.
And there's no time limit on that, correct?
No, it's going to have to be in fiscal year 18.
That's right.
Well, I mean, this coming year, or this year that we're
in. This current year, correct. And remember that you have a 4 to 6 month bill period on the bus. Typically, if we're going to purchase a bus in July, we call the vendor in January to let them know that we're going to purchase a bus.
Is there as much chance of this as there is an NBA lottery, or is there a different type of lottery?
I have no indication in terms of what the number of applicants that they receive and how many they select. It's a government program, so they have a limited number of funds available. So I really don't know that. And again, you know, like I said at one point earlier, it's there. The particularly with the student passenger van, we tried to buy a van. It was in our plan when we found out we got the small schools money. We're going to buy this van, and then the vendor says it's not ready. You can't get one until August. What do you want us to do?
That one's listed at the top, though. That one is listed as one of the items that.
No, that's down here.
Yes.
So that's but that's not considered one of the items that we would consider.
Okay. No, because they did. If they had actually ordered it in fiscal year 17 and it just didn't come in until 18, then clearly it'd be within there. But
you better believe next year we'll order
it. Well,
the one thing I will tell you this, whether we approve it or not, we've been very willing to work with everyone when they've come in.
Right.
Now, it's not like we're just saying, taking money and pulling it out from under you and saying, hi, you can't have it back.
We've been very willing
to work with everyone that's come to us and asked with a valid reason. We just are right now in the middle of a lot of projects, and we're getting our fund down quite a bit. And if we can start to build it back, and it's been because of good stewards like the schools and everybody else around the county that's been able to come in under budget, that's allowed us to build a nice-sized fund balance that we can pay a cash portion of the Zions Crossroads Water Project, which down the road hopefully means more jobs for every one of our students. And we keep our great minds here in the county working here rather than having them run off somewhere else to go find a good, high paying job.
Right. I completely understand.
Right. I mean, this is not so much of a bone of contention. It's just where we are now in our budget process.
Right. And suppose they've spent every penny of their budget. I mean, they're returning $500,000. I just don't see the quivering over 675. We gave them their appropriation. They returned 1.6 million. Now they have a need. And we're still getting $500,000 back. I don't see the quivering about it. I know exactly what our obligations are. I know what we have on the table. So I don't think there's anything to say to me, Patricia, to make me back up.
We just
really. I really don't. I'm sorry. I guess I'm just
the right to
crazy.
If they have a need that's out that they didn't ask for, that they didn't anticipate, that they didn't get money for last year, they can come and request it, and then it comes out of the fund balance or contingency, goes to that need. But we really should stick with policy and fund the things that, that they had needed to have paid for in 18.
We need to change the policy.
Well, and Mr. Nichols is suggesting during that,
I guess the
challenge
every year, and it doesn't make any sense.
But I guess the challenge is because all you know, you want to allow all divisions to present, right, or to have that opportunity.
I have heard this board say to the schools, "Why are you returning $400,000+? We gave it to you. Next time, spend it all."
You have not this
board.
Whoa, time out.
I didn't say this.
You haven't heard this board say that one time.
Wait a minute. And I said, I have heard boards. You're not listening. I did not say this board. I have sat in many board members, and I've heard that. I did not say you. So let's get that straight. And we don't need to be every year putting about. We need to support our schools. They returned 1.6. They need 600,000. That's exactly. Oh, we need to change our policy so we don't sit here every year and quiver over $100,000 or $200,000.
Well, I'm personally in favor of the $150,000, $300,000, and the $50,000. I think those are good requests. I think the $85,000, the $75,000. You know, while I'm sure are very valid, I think maybe play against, you know, coming back for that secondary request there. You know, that's, to me, it seems like those are very specific, targeted things. Would be great, as you point out, it'd be nice to have the Chromebooks, but you're not, just not gonna, there's no huge opportunity loss if you wait another few months for that, and likewise for the additional $75,000 for, I believe that was
personnel.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And I didn't explain what that was going to. Oh, that was to true up the compensation schedule.
Right.
Which I understand that, and I do see what you're trying to do there. And
which throws them back.
Is that to get those 40 that were on scale A and got pulled back to scale B? Is that to get them back to scale A?
Not at this time. That would be just to change to revise scale B. But we are looking at a possibility of moving some of those people forward at one point in time.
When you're talking about a budget, mm-hmm. each year, there are some years that you will project maybe that you're going to have 100 students increase. Mm-hmm. State pays approximately $5,000 per student. Mm-hmm. Instead of having 100, you might end up only with 50, yet you have that budgeted for that. But it can work in reverse also.
Correct.
So therefore, you could very well have a surplus in a year coming strictly from what the state offers you. So, you know, just to say, well, you should have spent it, that's not necessarily true.
Right.
Is that not right?
Right, and that's part of what happened last year when I talked at the beginning.
We ended up with some more students than we anticipated happening. Because before, you had been anticipating more students than what you actually got.
Right, the year that you had the shortfall, it was that we were projecting revenue based on a certain student enrollment, and the enrollment fell below that, and then we didn't receive the funding.
That's right. So you're really in the hole then.
Right, and they do two counts. They do one September 30, so we've already turned in our first count. But then the final count they do on March 31st, but you actually don't submit all of the reports and see all the actual processing of those that average daily membership until sometime in April. And so, you know, if we operate where we're trying to be careful and make sure that we're going to have enough state revenue to pay that, then the issue is it's April, May before you're able to proceed with things to make sure that we're not going to come back to you and go, oops, it's not enough money.
Right, what happened on September the 1st, this last year? What kind of projection did you have? Do you think it's going to be an increase or a decrease?
It's a little bit of an increase, but it's not
a
big
much.
Increase.
Because you were having different figures going into that with the state, I recall.
Correct. So what they do their projections based on what they think we're going to have in student enrollment, but what we actually get funding on is what we actually have in student enrollment.
Sure.
And you know, at any given time, you can have kids to move in and kids to move out.
Sure.
And you know, some people we see transition times all throughout the year. Like we got a new family from Guatemala the other day that had three kids. You know, it's just kind of a flexible thing. So you can't. When you look at our board packet every month, you see enrollment in there because we are constantly looking at enrollment and checking enrollment to make sure that it's on track and if we're losing kids, that we're planning for that.
These last 3 years, there's been an increase of about 100 homes, take or give.
Right.
So there's a ratio also with those homes to children.
Right.
So that gives you a little bit of projection, but that's not always right on the dot.
Correct. Correct. And you know, I believe that when the economy turned down, people weren't having children as often because it was like, you know, children are expensive. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I think I'll wait to have a child. But now that the economy started to turn around, it's like,
sure. Babies are coming now.
All right. You have quite a few teachers.
5-year-old showing up.
So what do we do? Do we go on one by one?
Well, I have one more question. So the $75,000, what is that towards?
Scale B. It would be adjustments to scale.
And you're going to do that in mid-year?
Yes, sir. That would be our plan.
What do you think?
And what would the adjustment do for scale B?
I mean,
what's your purpose?
A lot of these. And the buses, you know, I think they do need.
Well, I do. It's got to, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I understand the tension between scale A and scale B. I can't speak to how great a tension that is,
right.
How great a need that is from that standpoint. So it's, you know, it to me that seems, and granted you're still returning another $1 million, I get that. But looking at, you know, what we know is the CIP budget going close to $3 million in unrestricted funds. You know, assuming the money that we're counting on getting back and assuming what the schools are doing, you know, that we've got a hedge for future CIPs and we've got some expenses coming up.
More importantly on that line item though, is not that you have to hedge for future CIPs because that's not a CIP item, that's an operational budget item. If you pay the $75,000 from now, you've committed
to
paying the $75,000 in every year from now on. The others are one-time costs.
Right.
That's the
rub on that.
But
right.
Can you tell me what that's going to do for the people on the B scale, the 75,000? What are you trying to do? You trying to bring them adjust somewhere or what? Is it necessary, one of the steps necessary as you began to try to get the A and the B closer together?
It's the A scale typically tends to be a more level scale,
right.
And that there's more consistent increments
mm-hmm.
in. But scale A, you'll remember that we had that big jump that was about at year 14, 15.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And so you're never going to be able to get those people at that level.
Right.
But what we're trying to do is basically increase the staff on scale B to give them a bigger boost so that lifetime earnings gap is closer.
Right. And so that is an adjustment to help with the energy. I can understand
that.
Can I
clarify? I'm on scale A, not scale B.
See,
I'm on scale A, so if I vote towards this,
right.
It doesn't affect me one bit.
Mr. Sheridan, the Board of Supervisors is not voting for a pay increase.
Right.
Well, I mean,
you're not. You are voting for a pure dollar. They're justifying for whatever they want. You're only going to vote for a dollar amount.
And then they get to
the
decide
other
where
thing,
they put
so CIP, you'll vote for those specifically for CIP. So.
I think that I'll not put it in. I can go along with most of these others, but I think since it's each year, you have committed yourself from then on.
Well, but to their point, it's a very big need at you know, what was presented, basically, what did you say, 180 times
mm-hmm.
20,000?
Well, there's 120 people on scale B, so
right.
Nominally, if you carried that up to
the
last time, it's
$16 million or something like that. So it's a big gap. I mean, that's a bigger gap, too, as I understand it. Right, it's a big gap. But you know, that's, I mean, you know, that's... That's just, you know, I mean,
my question is the buses and the bottom one.
I'm sorry, say that again.
The buses and the additional technology. I just think buses are CIP project.
Well, if you approve this carryover, it will definitely go to CIP. Mm-hmm. I mean, it will be CIP dollars. It won't go into the operational budget. Mm-hmm. It goes to CIP.
Sure.
Whether you want it out of cycle or not, that's really the question. Because all you're doing is approving an out-of-cycle CIP project.
Well,
because the bottom three are CIP items. Mm-hmm. The top two on the screen would go to operational budget.
I mean, the other alternative would be reduce the buses, you know, by $75,000 and carry that out of the...
But then you...
I know, but I mean, I think if you're trying to address that gap, it's a huge gap. That's a big number, you know, $16 million. So it's a big number. So, but I don't know. Maybe you want to comment on the way we're thinking about this right now, this horse trading that's going on. I know you want it all, but
I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Oh my God!
Would you rather have six buses at the $75,000 or?
No, it's not six buses.
Our bus is 85 or 90.
Yeah, I was going to say, buses aren't that cheap.
We're thinking that's about three buses.
I was counting the other four buses that we're going to get this year. Mm-hmm. That's what I was counting on that.
My fear is we have a big bundle of buses, and then 15 down years down the road, we've got to then replace that large number of buses.
Well, it's two more than the normal cycle, I guess. So, and given the tight CIP budget, they might not get the same buses. Yeah,
the CIP originally, when it was adopted that way in 2012, was intended to cover four buses a year to be on a cycle for four. That's why it was 300,000, because they were estimated at that time to be 75K a piece. But obviously, 300,000 doesn't cover four buses now.
That's one thing nice about gas versus diesel. I think gas bus is cheaper than the diesel bus.
I can't really speak.
I think diesels were about 25.
We bought a little of both. Past couple of years.
So Steve, so that this money under this vehicle replacement, school bus replacement, and additional technology goes into the CIP.
Yeah, on your screen, the bottom three is $435,000. That's these three items right here. Mm-hmm. Vehicle replacement, school bus, and additional technology would go to the CIP budget, therefore would have to be spent on those specific line items. The top two would go into regular operating budget. And again, we've talked about this a lot back before with the schools and with others. These things, even if you forget this care of request, they're just out of cycle CIP requests. They're having to match it up with some dollars they had left, mm-hmm. and it's identifying dollars to a need. It really doesn't matter. If you're going to approve these, it doesn't matter if you tie it to a carryover or not. It still comes out of the same place, mm-hmm. fund balance.
Right.
Doesn't come out of a carryover. It comes out of fund balance.
Right. Yeah.
Because they put money back in, because everybody's money goes back in, and you're going to take some out for those purposes.
So if this money goes back to the CIP, then when we're addressing the CIP, that's when it gets approved.
No, ma'am.
No, you'd be approving it tonight. For that purpose, you'd be approving $435,000 if you said these three items in the bottom. You'd be approving it tonight. It's then, remember we always have a chart that has yellow, green, or red, yellow, and green, and red is your $8 million reserve, and yellow or anything that's already committed for a project, CIP projects, big capital projects, construction projects, and the green is money you have that you could potentially spend on because it's unencumbered, it's not identified anything. This 435, if you approve it for those three things, would go into the yellow category.
Right. Here.
It'd have to be spent on those things.
No, it wouldn't go on that list. It would be already funded for 18. It would go in the column to the left, because that's 19.
Right. Okay. But yet 19, you could, when we go to look at 19, we could look at...
You could say we bought some earlier, you might reduce 19
might
now.
Might reduce that amount.
That's not what they're asking for, but...
No, that's
not what I know that's not what you're asking
for. These are truly additional requests, but...
They are.
Okay.
But anyway, the top two would be, if you approve the top two, any portion thereof, it goes to operating budget for 18. The bottom three go into fiscal year 18 CIP, and they would have to spend on those purposes.
Okay.
But it looks to me like, again, the $75,000 is going to continue to contribute to that magnification between the two scales.
No, sir. The opposite way. That brings the B scale closer together.
It'll help him.
Oh, okay.
There's more than ones on the lower scale to bring them up.
You've never approved a pay raise like this mid-year for these kinds of things in, well, in the last 6 years. But again, it's an operational thing, but this is intended to close the gap between the scales.
That's the only reason I brought that 75 up, because that thing, that's why I wanted clarification, because that's designing to, and
It's a budget year thing normally, for any kind of pay increase.
Normally a budget year thing, but
it's the gift that keeps on
giving. Yeah, every year, 75,000, that'll never go away.
I'm good. Like I said, let me ask you this question. I'm going to change gears on you again. How many buses did we get with this past year's CIP?
I think it was...
Five?
I
think we got it's five. Well, those five, are they all gas or are they diesel?
I believe
three are diesel and two are gas.
Yeah, it's a combination.
Why wouldn't you stay diesel?
Well, it's got a couple different variables. We've got a good rate of gas. We were looking at some of the gas engines and how they were running. We only have two in our fleet, which was this year. And I think we've been having some difficulty with the diesel engines, but what I told the bus garage was that basically 95% of our fleet is diesel, so you're gonna have more issues with diesel buses. So we've gotta kinda keep an open mind with it.
And your mileage is certainly much better with diesel.
Yes, yes sir.
And gas prices probably won't stay the same.
Yes, sir. And we've actually been in contact with some of our bus representatives in terms of the diesel and where we can move with that.
Well, then my question would be, is it worthwhile to go after that $20,000 buying gas buses?
The only
you can buy diesel buses with that money. It's just that you have to buy newer buses with that money.
It's like the cash for buses.
So those five buses count towards our seven that you wanted?
Potentially.
Yeah, they could. I mean, it should.
I don't know because of the timing of the application, so I can't really speak to that for sure. And remember, federal fiscal years are different than the state fiscal years. So.
But that $20,000 can be a diesel, doesn't have to be gasoline.
Right, it doesn't matter.
I thought it had to be
a
gasoline.
They're just saying they want those older diesel buses that have emissions issues off of the road.
The title was right.
So they don't care if it's just as long as it's a newer bus.
1.4 or whatever.
If the time was right.
If the time was right, yeah.
Right.
Which would be $140,000.
Right.
Well, I certainly think the buses should be in there.
Okay. All right. So how many people think all the buses should be in there?
Yes.
So let me take you out to these motions, because you can, when you see on the motion, it may make it
easier. Let's just see which ones we want to approve as a board and which ones we're not.
Okay.
All right. The $165,000, I think that's the one you said pretty much falls under correct to ask for that back, because that's stuff you showed.
Right, that's within policy, because it was supposed to be expended in 2017.
Okay.
Do you have them broken out by that?
Yeah, I'm just trying to pull it up.
All right.
You got it broken out, so.
It's going to save us time.
I don't know why it's locked up here, but.
Uh-oh.
All right. How many people think the $75,000 should be in there?
Yes.
For this compensation?
For the compensation.
No.
No.
I'm torn.
Think about what the purpose is. Whether we're going to keep backing it up, and then they'll never that credit to be where they need to be.
When they can get raises, but it should be in our budget cycle. We really should bring it out.
And none of this should be here in that case. I mean,
well, how about the other departments? Are they going
to? Well, we've made adjustments.
Well, it's dependent on them. I mean, we're not basing the school on other departments.
That's a good question. Have we made personnel raises through this process before, Mr. Nichols?
Sir?
Have we made personnel raises through this process before?
No.
Yeah.
In the 6 years I've been here, you've never approved pay increases in the middle of the year, a systemic pay increase in the middle of the year, or even bonuses. You've approved a pay change for an individual when you approved a new PD or something like that, or someone got a promotion, but never any pay raises, only during budget season. But you don't have control over whether they give a raise or not.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're not approving this for that purpose. You're just approving carryover money for whatever they want to use it for.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know any of them what they're going to do.
Right. Well, I do think that should be in the budget.
So
meaning I'm not in favor of that.
Okay, so we got three no's. Well, sorry, Ms. Booker, you and I got over.
I think we have a better understanding than the rest of the board.
I think it's problematic when you're doing a pay increase.
Well, I think we've seen places where we knew that the pay was out of kilter.
Yeah, and we've
made
changed
a, we've
it.
Made
we've adjusted.
Attempts to adjust it. And
sure
to me, I look at, I mean, it's a much larger group, but I look at it that way.
And we have done it. When people have come in here
Ms. Booker.
And moved it from step 14 to step 15, we've done it.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mike, for reminding
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. All righty, schools, $50,000 for vehicle transportation.
Okay. I agree.
I think at least part of that needs to be done, because that maintenance, can y'all get a truck to push snow before January?
It's going to be
tough.
It's going to be tough. We'll start with this evening.
What do y'all think?
I think you need it.
I mean, I that's not all for one truck, but I can tell you right now, the guys riding around the SUV that's about 20 years old.
They have two now, this thing. They did have four.
Yes, sir. And they got to
need a heavier one.
They
don't care a smaller truck.
You talking about you finally got it up and running? All right. The buses.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Man, this is one of the few times I've been like this. I've been no more off than everybody else. But all righty, so the buses. Y'all want to put that in there? Additional technology needs.
Yes.
That can be deferred.
Yes. Everything that we're saying no to affects people.
You want
to
defer it?
Mm-hmm. Personnel combinations that affects
people. I love
you,
ma'am.
The car, the carts affect children.
Well, the vehicles affect children also, ma'am.
Yeah, but we're talking about learning.
Right.
I'm saying I'm not saying
right.
we shouldn't do vehicles. You have to let me talk.
So, yes, ma'am, I have, but they already voted no.
I'm just trying to justify it.
We have voted 3:15,
reasonable. We have not made a motion.
It's 5:15.
We have not done a motion.
It's 500.
Okay, so that
you've
got two motions. The top one is the 240K, 165 plus 75. All you need to do is fill in the number.
Okay.
So the 165 and 75 is totals up to 240, so it's one or the other or both or whatever.
165 is whatever.
Whatever proportion.
All right, so the first one would be 350,000.
Where? Okay.
No.
The first one. 165.
All right, but the first one includes which one?
It includes the 165 and the 75.
And the 75, which they said no.
Yes,
so you read the first motion with 165 in that first line.
Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve carryover of FY17 from Vanna County Public Schools unexpended local funds in the amount of $165,000, increasing the FY18 school's local appropriation from $17,260,315 to $17,425,315.
Second. Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Okay, so on the bottom one, you've got the three lines of the buses, the technology, and the student transportation.
It's 350.
And Mike, what did you say about the technology? What were you were going to make a comment about that?
I think that needs to be pushed back.
I want a motion on the adjustment to personnel compensation schedule so y'all can say yes and I can say no.
Well, ma'am, we already did that. It's been noted on the record.
They already voted against it.
We can make a motion to
yes,
put a different amount in there if you wanted to. I mean, maybe you would.
It's in the top one, ma'am. The one they just used.
Right, but she could make a motion, she could make a separate motion to put in a different amount if she wanted to, I guess.
It's already, yes, except you've already read the motion, adopted and passed it.
You passed the $165,000.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am, we voted against the $75,000.
Okay, where does it say that you voted against?
It's $240,000, ma'am, is the $165,000 plus $75,000 is $240,000.
I know.
And so we're saying, of that amount, what amount do you want in this motion? And they said $165,000 and voted on it.
Because in theory, they can go ahead and use that money on the other way if they want.
They can use it for anything they want, and they might use it for pay raises. That's not your choice.
I just want to put a record that I'm against.
But I think we crash bill if they don't use it for what they ask it for.
Do I have a motion on the last one for $350,000?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve carryover of FY17's Levanna County Public Schools unexpended local funds in the amount of $350,000 of the FY18 CIP budget schools for the following items: buses $300,000, technology $85,000.
No, don't read the technology.
No, not technology.
$300,000 for the buses and student transportation $50,000.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
I have a motion.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to move that the Board of Supervisors approve $35,000 to put into the adjustment to personnel compensation schedule.
35 or 75, ma'am?
35.
I said 35. Okay. I'm trying to compromise.
I will second it with reservation.
Trying to compromise.
Okay, we have a motion made to do a carryover to the FY17 Savannah County School Board budget of $35,000. And we have a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Was that an aye, Mr.
Yeah, it was aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. That passes 3-2.
Okay, I feel better.
So what did you just do?
I feel just better.
Made a motion for $35,000.
And tell me what you said in the motion.
Board of Supervisors carry over FY17 for the Savannah County Public School unexpended local funds for $35,000.
You cannot say four.
Yeah, I said for the compensation.
Well, you cannot say four, ma'am.
Okay.
All right.
Well, anyway, whatever I was supposed to say.
Well, what I mean is you can't designate to that, and I'm not sure you can.
Mr. Chairman, I think that motion's out of order.
Okay, Mr. Payne, we will go backwards then.
Okay, that's fine. Right. As long as I'm in the minutes, please. I'm supporting that.
Out of curiosity, why is it out of order?
Because it was.
It's a second of the second or.
No, it was.
It's a modification to the
issue.
It had already been determined. Okay, no, I'm sorry, Mr.
It would take a motion to reconsider.
Mr. Payne, I'm sorry. I should have asked you before they did it.
Well, and because I thought that was different because you could assign it, but when Mr. Nichols clarified that you can't assign it, then it is definitely.
Yeah, that is the correct level.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, so we need to just scratch that.
It still needs to be recorded.
It is recorded.
It's recorded, and the explanation will.
You can still make a motion to amend.
No, ma'am. You're letting them carry over money to the operational budget. There is no specification of what that money is for.
Right.
When it's the CIP, different story.
The record would show that the motion was made and ruled out of order.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Right. My fault.
Okay.
All righty. Now, where were we?
Moving on.
County carryover.
So will you just take, for all of you, we just take a quick look at the screen, make sure that's what you said, on what you've agreed to on these three motions, please?
Well, the third one's out of order, so just scratch the third one out.
Oh, I thought they revised it. Okay.
No.
Out of order because of the form that it was in, or just increased carryover?
We'd already.
You can.
Leave the motion there.
It's already subsumed within motion number one. It would take a motion to reconsider to.
Roger.
All right. So you have to have a motion to reconsider, then you can vote on it again.
All right. S, FY17 to FY18 county carryover request.
So either one of you can come up, please.
The sheriff, yeah, he
right.
Said that.
Yours are up top, so that.
Ladies.
So these first two are from the clerk of the circuit court.
I'm going to be quiet for them and get myself in trouble.
Thank you for allowing me to be here tonight to speak. As far as our clerk's office budget, I am requesting carryover basically of funds that I requested last year that we were not able to complete the projects that I had asked for last year. And sort of the completion of those projects has been sort of out of my hands. One of the projects is disaster recovery. Our marriage licenses are the only thing in our building that are not backed up. And there's no secondary copy of those. And so I received, and the code of Virginia now requires.
Trouble right there. I'm sorry. I'm
we can lose our marriage license. I'm not smiling while I'm saying that.
I'm sorry.
We won't tell anybody
who
said it either.
Just
right. Might ease the divorce.
But that's been a little revenue.
That's a little revenue.
Yeah, we won't get our filing.
Then the sheriff's calls will increase.
So the Code of Virginia requires that we have a disaster recovery plan in place. One of those, as part of that, I realized there was a deficit and we needed to have a digital copy of a marriage license made. That's an ongoing project. None of the marriage licenses have been scanned. So I have 240 years of marriage licenses that I've had to scan. I'm trying to do that in-house. Because
240 years,
isn't that? How old is the county?
240 years.
Exactly. You made me question myself.
I'm sorry.
Yes,
I thought I heard that one wrong.
From 1777 forward, none of those marriage licenses. There was no secondary copy of those, except for what's at Vital Records. And I'm not going to say, but
I can't
for
believe
us,
they even kept
no
all those records.
We started that project last year, but it's ongoing. We are halfway there. We're halfway there, so we're still working on it. So that's why I'm asking for those funds. That's why that project has not been completed. The other major projects that include that money that I'm asking to carry over were projects mainly in our records room. Last November, Will Shaw came to visit me and said that we've been having problems with our AC unit. It's been limping along for quite some time in the records room, which is a huge deal with the records and humidity, so we have to make sure it's operating properly. Had a discussion with him, was decided it was going to need to be replaced at some point, but in order to replace it, it is now in the ceiling of our records room. It needed to be moved down to ground level, which is going to take up floor space in our records room. So the projects that I had planned in there had to be put on hold because at that point I did not know how much floor space that was going to take up, where that closet that they have to build was going to be built. So I didn't want to basically build the permanent structures that we need to house our records and books and then have to tear down to put the closet for the AC unit in. I've met with Mr. Stevens in September, I believe, or early October. The unit definitely has to be replaced. There's not a whole lot more limping that it can do, and so that project, hopefully, by the end of the year, may be started. So I'm having to ask for these funds to be carried over so I can hopefully get those projects in the record room completed.
Is that going to be new equipment that you're putting in then?
New storage shelves, our law library.
And the machinery itself?
No, the machinery itself is actually all been updated.
Okay.
And that's all through our records management system, and that was all replaced last year, but that is all included in our records management cost. That was no additional cost to us. They maintain our equipment and replace it regularly through our contract, so that's no additional cost. This is just trying to use the space and build new shelving and that kind of stuff to store the records. Some of the records, the shelves, when we've had these records restored and preserved, the books are coming back larger than what they were going out, and part of the reason is they're coming back in sleeves. So a book that may have had been one book that leaves here, they come back in sleeves, so it's now two books. So the books, then they're preserved in that plastic sleeve. But we don't have room for two books in those metal shelving. So I'm having to get new shelves brought in, and I just haven't been able to do that because these are very large. I mean, they're very large shelving units.
Does this fall under the cost-saving energy program that we're in?
No, this has nothing to do
okay.
with that. Are you talking about the HVAC system, or are you talking about the shelving units? Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the
HVAC, I think.
No, I'm talking about the savings that we're going to have over the next 15 years in all of our equipment, air conditioners, heaters, and lights and all. Are you, does that?
I don't know.
There's two different discussions going on. One is about storage stuff and files. That's what she's talking about.
Right.
Separately, Public Works is going to replace.
I mentioned the HVAC only peripherally to tell you why her security and storage
could have been done in time.
The HVAC replacement was approved as a capital reserve maintenance fund request, I think, a month ago. Three meetings.
It's two separate things. She couldn't get this done last year because the HVAC had to be replaced.
And that's CIP money, so it's automatically carried over. What she's talking about is her project had to be delayed because of the HVAC replacement. And her project involves mainly shelving and
right.
new storage.
Okay.
New storage apparatus in the
that was going to be done last year, but couldn't be done
right.
last year.
Right, because
so
I found out.
So this is like we were talking about earlier.
The HVAC
is
above the ceiling in there. It has to be replaced. Well, we're not going to replace it above the ceiling because that's the worst place for all the water to leak and come down on records. So the HVAC is going to come down below when it gets replaced, and then she's going to put in new shelving and things all over. But she couldn't do it last year because we weren't done with the HVAC replacement.
Right.
So.
And the CRM was just approved by the board in September.
Right.
So that's why I'm requesting those funds. So I believe that they do fall under what is appropriate as far as carryover, because there are projects that I had wanted to get completed last year and unfortunately couldn't. So that's the clerk's budget request. As far as the circuit court judge's request, in June, late May, early June of this year, we had to have the recording equipment replaced, our court recording equipment replaced in the room. We've been having problems with the microphones in the room, and when they came to replace the recording equipment, it enhanced the issues. Once we had that replaced and upgraded, it enhanced the issues that we were having with the microphone systems. This microphone, which attaches to our witness box there, I believe, there's a short in it, and so tomorrow when we go to have court, every time this courtroom is broken down like this, it's wear and tear on our microphones.
She wants you to move to the basement over there.
and we have issues with our microphones almost every week. And so I started trying to have the microphones and the wiring checked in June of this year, but unfortunately, getting vendors and all of that organized prior to the end of the fiscal year, I was not able to actually get the project done. So I've been asking now to be able to complete that project and have the microphones. They have to be replaced, wiring checked, because there are at least three shorts that I know of that we have to stop court, come down here, wiggle wires. Just not only for amplification, but for the recording, and it is required by law that all of our felony cases are recorded, and so it is a major issue in the possibility of court not even happening if we don't have our microphones working properly. So that I'm asking to please have approved so that I can move forward with getting those microphones and such replaced.
So she'll call my office and complain about we're messing stuff up in here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We are.
Public Works is probably tired of hearing. Peter Welch is probably tired of hearing me first thing in the morning.
There's a lot of movement that happens every time we set up and turn it out.
Somebody needs to come down here and try to fix this. And, you know, they're not microphone specialists, so, you know, it is it's very difficult. So, it's not your fault in particular. I just want you to understand that it is every time these microphones are unplugged, it's wear and tear on our microphone system, on our recording system. And so, but that's the basis.
Any questions for Ms. Treadway? Thank you, dear. Young fellow? Oh, yeah, we're going to listen to you first. You first, and then we'll talk about some options.
Thank you very much. I have one of my glasses. Carryover request, the CAD training overtime. The CAD system was not approved until we started in the fiscal year FY18, so we did not know what our overtime requirements would be for that CAD system training. On the deputy side, it will require 24 hours for each deputy, additional hours of training, which they'll have to do on their days off. So we calculated that at 7,000, which last year we had approximately 9,000 left over that line because we try to manage them all really well. But even this year, with the training we've already been putting on, we can foresee that we're going to be way over in that line. That's why we requested that additional money.
And that's clearly a new need that came out of the budget cycle, and it would normally come in as a standalone request. It just happens to be tied to the timeline of the carryover, but it's a standalone need.
The holiday and discretionary pay, over the last several years, we're anywhere from $8,000 to $38,000 short in that line, and every year we go back to being at $44,000. So that's why we were asking, if we put the 13 in there, we'd be close to maybe not being short this year. But that's normally a line we have no real control over, but the money stays the same every year, even though consistently every year we spend a considerably more amount. Convention and education, I brought this up to you before when Sergeant Hurd had applied for a federal school in the Dakotas on mobile data transition. We did not know that he was going to be accepted until after the budget was done. We set our convention education budget based on who was going to school for FY18. So if we don't get the 2137 back, we'll be short 2137 for the course that he went to. And I'll drop down to the mobile device investigations, which the second part is. They gave him over $20,000 worth of equipment. However, the 2974 is larger items that he would need that they didn't give him because they were getting back on a plane to come back. So that's why we asked for that portion, because that was also part of that package. The police supply line, in light of everything that's gone on in Charlottesville area and the things that we've had to deal with here, we have never had any kind of riot gear or anything for head protection and eye protection. And with the savings that we had, I thought this would be a good time to beef that up as well as a replacement of our aging gas masks. There's 10 people that do not have any at all, as well as the canisters expire every so many years. So that's why we added that into the equation. Animal control. We asked for some holiday and discretion. They were not funded at all this year, but they worked the same schedule as deputies. They work 12-hour shifts, and they rotate with the deputies, and we have to count on them even on the holidays. So there's zero money in that account. We're in the hole. So I'd ask for the $6,000 to adequately fund them. And as part of the SPCA contract, which wasn't completed until the end of our budget cycle, we now have to pay for animals who, if they're injured prior to going to the SPCA, that medical bill comes back on us now. Currently in that line, we have $43.90 left. We're just getting started for the year. So we've been taking that out of the professional services line, which in the past we've used bounties and claims, but there's no longer any money in bounties and claims. So down on the 911 side, the same thing. The dispatchers are going to get impacted even far more than we will, because the dispatchers will actually be working, they'll have to work six days in a row each set to be able to do the training. The training is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So while that group is in training, the other group has to work the dispatch center. And then the next week, they have to flip over and do the same thing. And they have to do 40 hours of training per dispatcher. So that's why that amount is more, and it was not included in theirs. Same with the holiday and discretion. I didn't write the number down, but traditionally we're short in that line for them, and it kind of puts our whole budget out of whack. Any questions?
So
none of these are within policy, although they may be really good standalone merited, you know, requests. They don't fall into the policy you saw before, but
so for us to do this correctly, he would have to come back to another meeting and request it.
Because I'm trying to get you to clarify what your policy is going to be. If you're going to say yes, carryovers are normally tied to these two things, I wouldn't tell him to come back to another meeting if you're inclined to approve this. Just do it tonight. But policy going forward, we'll just work with departments to make sure that they request fall in this area or come in with a standalone request with justification for it. But I wouldn't delay anything tonight.
So you didn't anticipate any of these in the budget cycle?
No, ma'am. We didn't know that we were even going to have the CAT system. And then once we signed on the CAT system, they said, oh, by the way, your deputies have to have 24 hours of training. The dispatchers, 40 hours of training. And those two unique groups work the 12-hour shifts. So my admin staff, which for like myself and my command staff, will have to go to training for the entire month of March, April, and May, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But that's our regular work time. So there's no overtime for us. But those on the 12-hour work schedules will have to come on their day off. They can't work 12 hours and come into class for 8 hours.
And so the others will have to cover their shifts. So they'll have to work Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Normally, where dispatchers work, you know, 2 days off three, work 2 days, you know, in a rotation like that, they're going to have to work 6 days straight, six 12-hour shifts to accommodate, having to offset going to training, they have to do that for 2 weeks in a row.
But the CAT training is a one-time thing?
One-time thing. We're paying them as part of the contract. And that's why we're setting up our EOC as a training room. And we've got our computers for next year. We went ahead and ordered them. And we will have the terminal set up. And everybody has to have a computer so they can participate just like they were working in real time.
But these are all operational budget line items, and so
it would come out of the overtime budget line, correct? So, and that's doing the math. We figured that's roughly where we're going to be on both sides, 911, and with the deputies. So, with the 50,000 we normally have, would not cover that as well as the dispatch side.
This is basically you can pay me now, or you can pay me later.
I would have to come. Yeah, probably March. I'd have to come back and say, hey, we're going to be short here
for the overtime stuff.
Yeah.
No, it comes out of personal contingency. It wouldn't be coming back in a request. We would just up his.
We would just have to take it from there.
But the CAT training. I mean, so am I incorrect in thinking that if we approve the CAT training, it's part of the budget going forward at that point in time?
No, that's one-time dollar.
This is one time.
Yeah, this is the upfront training. For them to get up to speed for this brand new CAS system, right, they have to get everybody trained in a certain number of hours. So this is a one-time cost to train for the system. When a new person comes on board, they'll be trained by their colleagues.
I understand that. Right.
This is not a continuing budget thing. This is just...
Yeah. No, none of these by themselves are continuing budget, because the sheriff in his fiscal year 19 budget request will put in everything he requests for the budget. These are pop-ups or targets of opportunity. But his justification for them is what you should be considering. Again, forget the fact that it may be out of policy. If you were coming tonight, would these stand alone? Would you approve these? And would you find money to use that? He's just saying he knows where you can get the money for it. It's out of the leftover from last year.
What's left over from last year?
We don't ask for anything that we don't ask for.
Right. Right. True. Well, they ask for lots of stuff. Like that.
I think this group would be very pleased with our budget for this year.
All the departments have been very good about not being.
Does anybody have a question?
Sheriff has.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Let's look at the top two. Thank both the clerk's request. Those are all stuff that got knocked back. Well, one of them got knocked back. The other one is we don't want to have the judge writing them. Ms. Eager, any thoughts about that?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following carryover request of FY17 unexpended budget lines from listed departments to the FY18 department budget lines as specified and in the amounts listed. A, clerk of circuit court, security and disaster recovery, $26,000. B, circuit court judge, security storage, $9,000. C, sheriff's office, CAD training overtime, $7,000. D, sheriff's office, holiday and discretionary pay, $13,000. E, sheriff's office, training for mobile devices, $2,137. F, Sheriff's Office Police Supplies, $13,230. G, Sheriff's Office Mobile Device INV Services, $2,974. H, Animal Control Emergency Vet Care, $1,140. I, Animal Control Holiday and Discretionary Pay, $6,000. J, E911 CAD Training Overtime, $15,000. K, E911 Holiday and Discretionary Pay, $10,000. With the total amount of $105,481 to be reappropriated.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. This is 5-0. U, request to rescind resolution 17-2009 GIS mapping fees.
Mr. Chairman, this is very simple. You had adopted in this policy by this resolution schedule of fees for preparation of GIS mapping. The Freedom of Information Act has been clarified such that these fees are to be covered by the Freedom of Information Act. So this resolution is inconsistent with the act, and it is superfluous with the Freedom of Information Act. Okay. So I recommend you just simply withdraw the resolution.
Okay. Any questions? Somebody want to make a motion?
I move to rescind resolution 17-2009 GIS mapping fees in order to comply with the current Freedom of Information Act legislation.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0.
So note the lawyer was
clear. What I want to know is that
that's first for everything.
When this resolution was adopted in 2009, was Mr. Weaver on the board?
Yes. That was 100 years ago.
Hey, 1,000 years ago. Mr. Weaver made the motion. Thank you very much. I read that part.
Yeah.
All right, B.
Get you in trouble here, say.
Yes, sir.
So you've got a brief last time on the Charlottesville Area Alliance. What's coming forward to you now is a resolution of support. It's not a financial resolution. It's just a resolution of support for that agency. And the briefing was in your package from the end last time.
They're representatives here. Last time. Right. Anybody have a question?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. I have a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Charlottesville Area Alliance Support Resolution.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next time we probably ought to put y'all first. Y'all can sit there for about 30 seconds and head on down the road. But thank y'all for coming. Thank y'all for all you do.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That's when I started laughing. I looked up there and shook my head. Well, man, we probably should have. My fault. W, Blue Banner County reassessment process proposals. They're much taller, Mr. Toller.
No, Mr. Dollar.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dollar.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, so this is just to discuss the Blue Banner County reassessment process proposal. We're getting ready to put out an RFP for a new firm to do the county's reassessment. And part of that, the board needs to make just some decisions or possibly reaffirm some decisions. So per Virginia code, in order to schedule a general reassessment other than every 4 years, the board must approve a resolution to do so. The last time the board approved that was in September 2013, and at that time they decided that they wanted to do a general reassessment every 2 years with, one being an administrative reassessment and the second being a full reassessment, but they're both considered general reassessments. So just to kind of reiterate that, as we're going through the process, we're in that whole period, so the board needs to now kind of decide if we want to stick on that same, every other year reassessment process. So just the recommendation, and we've had discussions with the Commissioner of Revenue's office as well, so the recommendation is implement a repeating schedule over a 4 year cycle, with year one being the administrative general reassessment of all property, focusing on both sales data and any new construction. Year two, effective January 1, 2019, would be the equalized tax rate. Year three, do a full general reassessment with all new and existing properties viewed and photographed. And then year four would be the effective equalized tax rate. So, like I said, kind of going with this process just maintains our frequency of reassessments, keeps the tax rate and the property values kind of consistent without any big swings as we did when we decided not to do reassessments for 6 years.
Yeah, I think it's important that we do that to keep the utility companies, mm-hmm. that we get yes. the taxes on those.
Yeah.
This is really just matching up with the way the law says, because we want to be in concert with that. So it's not really changing what you've already approved, but we're making you say yes to it so we can put out right. a new RFP.
Any other questions? Can we get a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize staff to prepare a request for proposals, RFP, to conduct two general reassessments of the real property and improvements within the county, with the first to become effective as of January 1st, 2019, and the second general assessment to become effective on January 1st, 2021.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now head to presentations. At tab XRC, ARC building upgrades, Mr. Stevens.
I'll assure you, I'm not asking you guys to make any decisions regarding money, but if you remember, a while back, county was asked by the ARC for some help in assessing the maintenance needs of their building and to consider then entering into some kind of agreement with them to possibly assist with implementing the repairs. And the reason for that is the ARC building is used by the county on several occasions each year, but it is the designated polling place for the Columbia District. It is also used at least once a month currently by the county for parks and rec activities and programs. They wouldn't mind being able to use the building more often, but some HVAC limitations and some other things, and just the general condition of the building make it kind of not the greatest place to have an event right now. So now, apart from the fire station in Kent Store, the county owns no other buildings or facilities anywhere in the Kent Store area. And when we went to do the assessment, I took some pictures. You can see when we went in there was some standing water on the wooden floor in the back corner, which was a direct result of the roof being in a very poor state of repair. I don't know if you can see exactly. The roof's in pretty bad shape right there, and that happens to be portion of the roof that's right over that corner. The kitchen, you can't really see the indentation here, but if you try to walk right there where that, you may, depending on how much you weigh, you might fall right through it.
If two of us walk by there together, we're going to be standing on the ground.
That's a handicap
entrance. And that is the handicap entrance.
Yeah, that's the ADA entrance.
So that's where the handicap entrance comes in.
This is the main, I don't know, how many of you, I assume everybody here has seen the building. It's a concrete block building, reasonably good size. It mainly consists of a very large room, a kitchen,
The bottom left is a large room looking from the kitchen out.
And you can see it's a pretty good sized room. It's not very well lit. There are six ceiling fans with little clusters of light fixtures on them. That's about the only lighting in the entire main room.
It's terrible.
It's pretty tough to have an event. If you're having a dance, I guess, and you don't need a lot of light.
It's great. Hey, it's right there, baby. Set the room right there.
That's why we do the senior center there.
It probably is not. The electric service is very old. The interior electric panel is actually relatively new. It's in good shape, but the main electric service and meter are in pretty rough shape. So following the assessment, we tried to come up with some costs for what it was going to take to fix some of the things. And we divided things up into what we consider immediate needs, which are things you probably need to do just to be able to use the building effectively. And then we have some additional items, which you might call a wish list for replacements. Probably of utmost, most important, the roof and the gutters and downspouts and the kitchen floor. Even before putting an HVAC system in there, I would take care of that because the kitchen needs a complete new floor, a new floor underlayment, a new floor and a remodel. Obviously the roof and gutters and downspouts. The HVAC system, it currently does not have air conditioning. It's got rudimentary heat, but there's no air conditioning anywhere in the building, making it very difficult to use during the summertime by anybody. Interior lighting and the electric service upgrade. And anywhere you see some italicized and a company name afterwards, that's somebody where we've actually gotten an estimate from a firm to do work. Now, I'm not saying we couldn't do it, maybe get a better estimate from someone else and get better
pricing.
But
that's a ballpark number.
But this was just trying to be a kind of a high-level analysis, not putting an enormous amount of time into it. So we use some of our contractors that we use on a regular basis just to give us some good ideas on what it might cost to do some of these things. Registrar is very interested in having backup power at all the polling places. I think it's reasonably important. I don't know that we've ever had a power outage on an election day, but it would be pretty catastrophic. I mean, we stand ready. We've got a couple of portable trailer-mounted generators that we might be able to carry to a couple of places were there to be something, an event like that. But that's why the generator's on a wish list. There's just general all-around wall repairs and paint, maybe some bettering at outside lighting because there is no parking lot lighting on the site. Kitchen window's in pretty bad shape. A couple of the doors are in reasonably bad shape and could use some finishing. The wood floor, you can probably see from the photo. Okay, can I go back?
Sure.
It's not in bad shape. It doesn't need a lot of repairs. What it needs is refinishing, so we got an estimate for doing that, and of course doing some ceilings, which may even include a ceiling grid and just a slight drop in it, which that also would entail, or would improve your ability to put the HVAC system in and need a place to run ductwork. You see the costs are not unsubstantial, and I don't know what the board's opinion of what to do about this is. I will say that the county, again, we do not have any facilities, and as far as having facilities in different areas of the county, our own comprehensive plan mentions having a balance of system. This is from the Parks and Rec section. Having a balanced system of available parks, facilities, open space, and recreation program opportunities that are distributed and accessible to all residents. And another portion from our own comprehensive plan states that one of the goals of Parks and Rec is to foster public-private partnerships with recreation-based organizations or other interested parties for facility construction and program implementation. Now, I can tell you, as a $100,000 basically here of improvements that would need to be done to that building, which I don't know what kind of an agreement you might be able to get with ARC, by the way, stands for Agricultural Recreational Center.
Well, it has recreation in it.
So, I mean, like to me, I think you could make a good argument that you're fostering public-private partnerships by having a partnership with the ARC. I would envision the county, of course, having use of the facility on certain scheduled occasions at no charge. There's currently a nominal charge paid whenever we use the building, or whenever anybody uses the building. As far as having facilities in the outlying areas of the county, it's not insubstantial, but it's a relatively inexpensive way to have a quasi-county facility in a portion of the county that's currently underserved. And that's all I'll say. I'm not asking you to take a decision now. I think if the board is inclined to even potentially pursue this, we should sit down with officials from the ARC and discuss the terms of whatever agreement we might be able to make, discuss what kind of funds they would be able to raise to pay for a portion of this themselves, and discuss the finances of the county, if the county was inclined to front or provide some of the money for this, what the county would then get as a benefit in return.
Is that in the budget?
Oh, no, sir. This is strictly a request to help them assess their needs, which I certainly don't mind doing, given that they are a local civic organization that's trying to do things. We have not budgeted anything so far for this, and it would obviously need to be budgeted for where the county
or either approve it in this fiscal year as an additional request, or in the fiscal year 19 budget.
But again, I think it's important now to probably sit down with officials from the ARC and discuss these cost estimates. Maybe kind of sharpen a pencil and improve them a little bit, and then also discuss with them whatever fundraising that they have been able to do or are willing to do to try to put towards this. And then, in a similar way to Mr. Maltz was in here, he's a fantastic fundraiser. If you stop by and said, you can tell him I'll help raise money for it if you want. So,
oh, he did say that?
Yes, he did.
We may hold him to that.
Mr.
Weaver, Mel's one of the board members, and I spoke with him, and the three main things that he talked about were the AC, the lighting, and the floor. The floor, and the problem with trying to move the voting precinct from the ARC Hall building, if you decided to, you wanted to move it to the firehouse, we have 15 parking spaces at the firehouse, and that is it.
And it's a lot smaller than all my.
And the inside of our room is about the size as from where Wayne's standing. Mm-hmm. It's not even to that wall.
No.
To that, the walkway to walkway to about where we are.
Get a church to vote in one of the churches over there.
I guess we can get a church to vote in.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you want that.
It costs $100 to use it for one day. I'm just throwing some of
yes,
these
sir.
Things out. That's $150,000 that I'm looking at right here today.
The other
money in this, if you take all that.
Wayne, are you familiar with the affordable heating and cooling small ones that you put on the wall?
That's something that we could potentially pursue. This HVAC estimate was based on basically putting a full-blown conventional system in. I did have a brief discussion with Mr. Edwards of CII about, and he did agree you could potentially save costs by going with mini splits, and it would save on the upward as well.
Yeah, very.
It's something we could pursue to try to see if we could lower this estimate. But again, I think as the county's own planning does call for us to try to have facilities spread out around the county. Obviously, we don't have enough money to go out and construct a county-owned recreation center in each district, if you will, of the county, and then staff it with people on a full-time basis. But something like this in this district, something at a similar facility in another underserved district, would potentially be a good compromise in a way of being able to have county programs, parks and rec programs, or human services programs, social services programs, that go to that facility and set up for a day or two and do their business, and then still have them centered at the community, community center of Fourth Union and at Pleasant Grove, but have these satellites that are, you know, to be honest with you, if they're not owned by the county, then the full freight of maintaining them doesn't fall to the county. The full freight of constructing something, a new building, doesn't fall to the county, but you still are able to provide services and programs at the more remote locations in the county than we currently can now. And that would be my justification for trying to move forward on doing this. But again, it's completely up to the board. This one was something that we did as a request. It's kind of what we came up with as a cost.
So we're asking for the sense of the board.
It's a nice, large building, and it's a shame to have it deteriorate. Like, we do use it as a voting facility. And
well, I mean, this is a community activity center.
Definitely.
That the ARC runs.
Town hall meetings, community center.
I think if it had
senior center,
HVAC, better lighting, and of course a roof that doesn't leak.
The seniors can't use it in the summertime. No, in the summertime. We have heat. We have heat, but we don't have any kind of cooling.
We went to the church.
Just primarily.
Yeah, they went to the church or in the
roof. Oh, did you?
Okay. The better lighting, you know, the kitchen improvements and an air conditioning system, I think it would open it up. Just also for the ARC to I think maybe go back, because from what I understand in the old days, they used to have regular dances there and events.
We possibly do that as well. So they could possibly, I don't want to speak for them, but they could possibly do those if we got those upgrades to raise the money like we did with some of the others and possibly be able to help anyway. So I don't want to speak for anybody. I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth.
If you're not interested in even considering this, then we can drop it. If you are, then I think that, you know, county staff could be making some inroads with the ARC folks to see.
I think we should be open to a conversation with the ARC board and maybe, you know, pare down some of the cost.
We'll do our best.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying to what the priorities would be. You know,
right.
We could eliminate 7 or 8 or 9 of those things and do 2 or 3.
Well, as you can
well,
see.
Well, I mean, if it's a public-private partnership, then you want to see, and that would be part of the negotiations, is, you know, what the ARC is contributing in relationship to, you know, those factors. So I think, you know, it makes sense to, if the county administrator agrees, it makes sense to invest county staff time to, you know, investigate whether it's good or not.
Well, it's a philosophical discussion for you all. The staff time is not a problem from my perspective. It's a philosophical discussion whether you want us to take a look at this. If we do, staff would be glad to do it.
Yeah,
take
I
a look
think
at
we
it.
Ought to.
Mr. Weaver?
I don't know. You all go ahead and do what you want to.
Okay. All right, well, you got 3 nods.
So we'll discuss with the ARC, we'll prioritize the stuff on there, and we'll validate some costs and come back to you with the kind of sequential
combination there,
Yeah, we might even want to schedule.
Mr. Sheridan said to apologize to y'all, his granddaughter was in a play tonight. And if he hadn't have gone there, he might have been one of those.
That was about 4 hours ago.
I think the other thing is,
we've been here so long now,
that I would want to make sure that if we're going to invest money in it, that we have some certainty of our use.
Absolutely.
Right. Oh, no. They are absolutely willing to guarantee years of usage.
Yeah.
And no charge.
Indeed.
Right.
And what might that be?
Well, you know, no charge for polling place, town hall meetings, senior.
Polling place is the big one that concerns me. Because if we simply have a handshake agreement that we can use it now and then, and something happens that, you know, the week before the election, there's a fire or the roof caves in or something like that, where do we stand then? I mean, and I'm not supposing that they're going to, you know, try to cheat us or something. I mean, what happens if they don't have a choice?
Well, that's a fair question, but wouldn't that be the kind of responsibility? I mean, contingency plans on the part of the electoral board to say here are alternative locations.
I don't disagree with that.
All righty. Mr. O'Brien.
Short
Mr. Chair.
Short of a deck or
I would move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. B, Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from the open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker.
I have to eat something.
Ms. Egan.
Aye.
Mr. Weaver. Ms. Booker.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien.
Aye.
Yeah. Chair votes aye. We're back in open session.
I think you're taking bananas and you're costing taxpayers dollars.
Aye, there you go.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move we adjourn.
All right, we have a motion made by Ms. Booker. Second? Second?
Second.
Thank you. Seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.